Week in Confirmed is brought to you by Game Center, the must-have app for gamers. Game Center is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 7,000 games. Game Center is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
We can confirm.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Weekend Confirmed. My name is Garnet Lee, and this is our GDC 2011 edition here by the grace and courtesy of CBS Interactive and GameSpot, which means that Mr. John Davison is our most esteemed guest here today.
Hello.
Hooray. Ooh, clapping.
Yeah. Well, you know, now that it's out there, we know that we have you on just to get a hold of the space.
Yeah, I'm just, yeah.
All right, nice. So you're off now. You're done.
Okay, bye.
It's a nice studio.
It is. And that's Mr. Mark McDonald, all the way from Tokyo.
Hello.
Great to have you, dude. I'm very, very happy to have you
Came
here.
Came just for this. Been on my calendar for the last 24 hours at least. So,
at least. Yeah. Like that. We stayed in contact with Mark via Twitter. It's kind of weird. We turned Twitter into like our own instant messaging system.
Yeah, I don't have an actual cell phone, so and my email address is way too complicated for a lot of people. So actually, DM Twitter with alerts has become a weird lifeline for me, but it's kind of a weird way of communicating with people.
But it's
kind of
cool.
They give out not complicated email addresses, right?
Well,
pretty easy to get.
But Google has this service called Gmail. It's really useful.
But they don't pop up on my phone, unfortunately. They won't just pop up right when I get one, sadly. Okay. So, yeah, it's a long, boring story. But anyway, I'm here. Thank you. Good to be here.
So there's that. And Mr. Jeff Cannata is here on the first segment.
Very excited. Very excited. GDC.
We should clap,
Jeff. Yay,
oh, Jeff. In an all-American, let's clap everything kind of way.
In a it becomes meaningless kind of way.
My kids go through this at school when they do PE and they do their contests. It's there's no score. It's fun to fun.
Oh, fun to fun.
I almost
shoot me in the face.
Flipped my lid when I heard that.
Wow.
I think we already have the next loop right there.
Fun to fun.
Oh no, I was actually meaning shoot me in the face. I think that's probably going to be the next loop song.
Fun.
Here's what the show is going to be like today. We're going to do GDC stuff. Obviously, we're going to go back and forth. We're going to start off. We're going to talk a little bit about the Game Developers Conference, where it's come from, what it is now, and you know how it faces up into the world of game conventions with DICE and E3. And then we're going to talk about some games, and then we're going to talk about some sessions, and we're talking about some games. We also have waiting in the wings, Mr. Zav Damatos from Shack News. He's going to be back up on our home podcast, and Ariel Angelotti from Pixel Junk. We have one producer. So at least we have some game business here. And it's like we know what we're talking about. And
but
so
GDC isn't about game business, dude.
What is GDC about then, Mr. Cannata?
It's about announcements and press conferences and behind the scenes exclusive interviews.
Balloons in the air. Thousands of them in the bay.
Oh, wow. A lot of people very upset by the balloons.
Yeah.
I missed that. What's the balloons in the bay thing?
So GameStop and THQ did a...
The Homefront thing, right?
The Homefront thing. Yeah. And it was a riff on the South Korean balloon thing into North Korea. And so there were all these red balloons with pre-order offers attached to the bottom, and they released 10,000 of them or something over San Francisco. So all the crunchy sandal-wearing granola eaters in San Francisco freaked out about it.
Because of the pollution?
Well, because like half of them ended up just going like a mile due east and going right into the bay.
It was raining when they released them.
Yeah. It was impressive.
Some guy in a sailboat just got hit with like 6,000 balloons.
What is all this shit?
Where does that conversation go? It's like, oh yeah, we're going to do this balloon release. Well, it's raining. Yeah, do you see these balloons? They are not going to wait.
We distinctly said that Wednesday was going to be balloon day.
I will say it was impressive. Like I was over in the, what was it, the West Hall or whatever, when they released, I'm like, what the hell is going on? It's definitely like a big, huge thing. But the other funny thing is you mentioned, John, GameStop. And they were not, they complete, I saw a story on it and they were like, we didn't know this was happening. This is THQ's thing.
They just asked for 10.
We were not involved.
They just asked for 10,000 pieces of paper with a pre-order thing on it. We had no idea what they were going to do with
them.
We
don't ask where these things go.
We walked into a store. We offered them this deal just as our normal employees
and
do.
And incidentally, would you like to pre-order Homefront?
Yeah.
Incidentally, would you like to trade in some games and order Homefront? We remember this spiel very well.
But we're talking now about Homefront, where I'm gonna guess we probably wouldn't be right now.
It's a stunt at GDC that worked.
Boom.
So here to me is part of the problem with what's happened to GDC is it's become the de facto spring E3. It's not as much GDC as it was back in San Jose. I actually sort of find myself saying I miss San Jose.
Well, so you're saying San Jose. You're not saying it hasn't been like this the last few years.
Oh, it's been like this the last few years, but I think that this is probably the most pronounced I've seen it.
Well, was it Gears 2 that was at GDC? Am I remembering that totally wrong? When Griffey came out at the thing and the chainsaw through the piece of paper, like. I hope I'm not completely wrong. I was hoping. But
those were at least sessions. So here's what happens now as a modern member of the media trying to cover the show is your schedule gets filled with demos at all the suites that are around the place, and you don't get any time to go to all the sessions, which is really ostensibly the reason the damn thing exists.
Mm-hmm. I mean, they still do. There's a lot of stuff that it goes right over your head as they're talking about, you know, coding for... Oh, I don't know. I'm not even going to give an example. I can't even think of one. Yeah, well, but there still is a lot of that. But
there is. That's the question: is that stuff for us? Is it two separate conferences that are happening at the same time?
Yes.
There's one conference for the professionals, and they're all sort of doing their professional thing. And we used to be able to go in and hang out and kind of observe fly on the wall style that conference. But now there's this second conference that sort of sprung up alongside it. That's for us, where all these hotel rooms where we're shuffled in and shuffled out of meetings, which is basically mini E3.
Right. To me, it's like it's any industry getting bigger and growing up. I mean, people complain about Sundance isn't what it was. And you know, this big con is now like a big, in the film industry, con is just a big dog and pony show. There's like these, you know, AAA blockbuster Bruce Willis movies that are premiering at con now. And that whereas that would have been unthinkable before, it's like anytime you're going to get a group of these people together in this day and age and have everybody there, it's just like, you know, raw meat dangled in front of all
PR
of these,
and marketing. Yeah. PR and marketing is like, oh, look, all the media is there. I need to take advantage of this.
Yeah. But, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing? I mean, you're talking about it like it's a bad thing. I will say one thing, and John, I think you tweeted this, that it is kind of a bad thing, is when something that could really be an opportunity for the developers, like a keynote or something like that, that does kind of become more of a big ad. I think as long as you know you're going into the ad, or the, you know, you know
then,
what I'm saying?
But what I thought, I mean, so this was about the Iwata keynote.
Obviously.
We're segueing into that already. But I mean, like, to me, keynote is when someone who is in a leadership position in an industry and goes and says something inspiring and provides some information with which to inspire, you know?
Yeah.
And that's not what he did.
I think he tried to do the inspiring thing. He just didn't provide any of the information.
Yeah.
It was, the end of the keynote was literally... innovate, pursue your dreams, and believe in your passion. It's like, really?
Yeah.
Everybody, that's what we need to hear?
Everybody be happy.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. It's the most pat, banal, like, answer.
Did you just call Iwata's talk banal?
I thought it was. I thought it was absolutely the most simplistic form of inspiration you can...
But Jeff, you know, there was a tail on the Mario logo.
And that's the thing. It was really more of a press conference than it was a keynote.
Exactly. Yeah. It was. I mean, I think it was like a mix of the two things, right? There was some talk of his past and history and how they'd been.
There was
at GDC.
A lot of cool stuff there. I mean, I have my notes pulled up right here. There was actually quite a bit of very cool stuff they did. I think what really threw it off was having Reggie come out and do a bunch of 3DS announcements in the midst of Iwata's keynote.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't do either of them any favors, I don't think, because that became, oh, well, look, we have Netflix and 10,000 plus AT&T Wi-Fi hotspots for Nintendo 3DS instead of all this cool stuff Iwata was talking about.
Impressed by the Netflix announcement, by the way.
Obviously. Were you not impressed?
A modern connected consumer electronics device that can do Netflix? Wow.
Kudos to Netflix, though, because you can't put out a device now.
Yeah.
You know, like it they've become that ubiquitous.
I love how confused a lot of people were about the 3D trailers thing, because it was the way that they'd announced it was very cunning, because it was like 3D trailers and Netflix, which I think some people mashed together as, wow, 3D content on Netflix. No, it's not.
3D I'm one of those people that misunderstood
on
that.
Netflix. It's Netflix, and Nintendo will push you 3D trailers, but Netflix isn't doing that.
Two separate things. Yeah. Two separate things. The bandwidth to transmit the 3D would be pretty high, I would think.
Well, I thought that's why they were only doing trailers to start, but did you guys see any of the live-action trailers? They had some of the 3DSs set up with live-action trailers.
No.
Blew me away. I'm a believer. They had that...
Mark has his here with him. He brought his 3DS all the way from Tokyo.
Well, they had two trailers on the show floor that you could watch. One for Rio, which is a CG animated movie. And I was like, yeah, it looks like...
it's not
like
the
CG thing.
Duran video?
That would be awesome.
I know.
Because
awesome.
I was like, shit. With like Simon Le Bon on the front of the boat, like leaning out over the water.
Hungry like the wolf. It's like climbing out of the jungle.
I want Girls
right
on Film.
Face.
We can all agree Girls on Film would be the best.
Okay. Oh.
No, but then the other trailer was this movie called Born to Be Wild, which is an IMAX nature documentary about orangutans. So it was the first live-action content I've seen in 3D on that device, and it blew me away. It was
It must have been
great.
Really good if it was that, and it blew you away.
Yeah.
You're like, well, it's live-action orangutan. Okay, live-action orangutan documentary. But I mean, obviously, you're like,
the quality
of
this
is lighting up. Yeah.
Yeah,
but there's something a little weird. I mean, you're talking about a movie that's like designed to be like this big visual spectacle in IMAX, and you're looking at it on a postage stamp.
This is true, but I don't think anybody would recommend this to be the only way you see this movie or the first way you see this movie. But I was impressed that 3D content, live action video, can be pushed through this device and look so good and have the quality of the 3D be so good. I was impressed.
Does that make it a must-have?
Man, it's a must-have for me. You're referencing his use of must-have as a button point for... But he didn't explain how you make things must-have. There was no detail. There was no actual content to his speech. It was just like, be innovative and try hard and, you know, eat your vegetables.
So he hit some points that everybody, I think, agrees about. It wasn't exactly, here's how we... go about doing that at Nintendo, unfortunately.
He was pretty specific about some of those things. I mean, he talked about how to them they always push innovation, which is that they approach it from a standpoint of, we look at something that people think is impossible, and then we go and do it. And he pointed out, I think he made a really interesting point about multiple screens, how when DS came out, we were like, you can't do two screens. That's ridiculous. No one's going to look at two screens. And now, not only look at two screens, we're like looking at three and four screens all the time. We have a laptop and an iPad, and we're watching television.
But wouldn't it have been more interesting if he had explained how they came to that idea?
Oh, yeah. What's the process?
Don't disagree with that at all. I'm not.
It's not so much. It was much more. Wow, we turned out to be right on that one, everybody. it's like they could have easily been wrong, but how did they get to, deciding that?
So an interesting adjunct to this is Kono. I forget his first name, but Mr. Kono, who headed the development of the 3DS hardware at Nintendo, had a speech later that day about developing the 3DS, and he did actually talk about some of that kind of stuff. He showed, they hooked up a Wii to they've talked about this a little bit in the Iwata Asks.
That Iwata Asks was really cool.
Yeah, but they actually showed it. They had like a Wii controller. At first, I think it was just a switch for the 3D slider. They had that idea, and they're like, yeah, maybe we could do that. And they showed it just like, totally jury-rigged, taped to the end of a nunchuck controller. They showed the original DS when they were trying to get it right, where the D-pad was going to be and the analog stick was going to be. They actually had them where they could kind of hot swap it. They were little puzzle pieces. And I think they even considered selling that for a while. It's like,
really?
Well, if you want the analog stick down here and the D-pad up here... they take this out and just swap them yourself, like,
or if you're
pieces.
Six and you want to swallow it, go for it.
but they talked a little bit more about that process there at that, which I thought was really interesting. But
it's interesting you guys were so down on the keynote, though, because I thought there were two parts of it that were really cool, and I want to, like, the second part I'll get to in just a second, but he did actually talk some about how to make a must-have. Remember, he gave the two points. He said that you've got to be able to discern the central appeal of a game in 10 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And then he said that it has to be quick. And I thought this was really insightful and a good lesson. It has to be quick and easy for people to describe the unique nature of your game so that they can put it out on their social graph.
Right. I don't think saying the first 10 minutes is important. It's like, okay, good. Good point. I agree with you. And I'm not trying to be down on the keynote because I think he said some other interesting stuff. But it's like, okay, well, then how do you do that? Like, let's get into, like, that to me is not news that the first, I agree wholeheartedly, but like, I say the first like 5 minutes.
I don't even know that you have 10 minutes.
No.
Mm-hmm. To me, I agree with Mark. There were some things that I took away from the keynote that were interesting. But for the most part, that felt like, hey, kids, you got to grab them. Oh, okay, Mr. Barnum, how do I grab them? Well, I'm not interested in telling you about that. You know, it's like it's the most surface level version of okay. that information. It didn't give me any insight. It just gave me kind of pat answers.
Which for something like E3 is great. This is why I would thought it was more of a press conference than a keynote, because given who the real audience is supposed to be, it should have been, as a developer, you should have walked out of that feeling like, I have got to find some way to make a game for 3DS.
Yeah.
But instead, it was a message to us as members of the media to be, you got to tell people 3DS is awesome.
Mm. And it's funny, he did that, I think, when the DS came out. He had a keynote then, too, and he talked about how he was a developer. And a lot of people did leave that one really inspired to make something.
Come on, we learned about Tinkle Popo.
Tinkle Popo was
funny. That was pretty good.
It was briefly trending on Twitter.
Which is amazing. So one last thing about the Iwata keynote, and then I think we've like totally talked it to death, but that I thought was funny was that he talked about, so Mario, the way that Mario has stayed popular over all this time is we innovate. Every time it's something, you know, innovative, we do something new, you know, it was Mario 1, Mario 2, we went to Mario 64, like there's always a new mechanic. And then he's like, and then there's Pokemon, and it's just kind of like, okay, how is he gonna? You know, how are you gonna bridge this? Like, not even
where we
any
take the same idea and milk it out every year.
Exactly. And it's like, here's a line of like the 600 Pokemon games that have all been exactly the same
to the point where they're now taking old ones and just repackaging them and calling them a different color.
Well, they did innovate. They did innovate. They just innovated once, and they've duplicated it a few times.
So it's kind of like, yeah, you should innovate sometimes, and you can be successful,
except when you don't need to.
Yeah, if you have a fucking
great money
idea.
Is still coming in. If it ain't broke.
All right, then you guys tell me what you think about the three concerns that he raised, because it wasn't just all rah rah. He was very upset about the disruption that mobile apps have made. He said there's three big concerns that he has about games, about the video game business. The first one is that the era of the giant game that's being produced by tons and tons of people and has such a huge budget has limited the era of craftsmanship, that there's not enough, even if you had all the money in the world and all the talent in the world, that you just couldn't go back and polish the game over and over and over the way they used to make it a wonderful game. Do you guys think that that's really happening? Because how big of a threat is there to craftsmanship in games?
This sort of thing to me is like, the sun comes up tomorrow too. Like, it's just going to happen. Like, same thing with movies. I keep going back to movies.
It's like Avatar versus, I don't know, pick an indie movie.
Right. It's going to happen. Budgets are going to get higher. There's going to be these very, you know, crass commercial cash-in, big summer blockbuster games that are not that good. But at the same time, quality, I think, will win out overall in the end. Indies are now getting way better and way more attention. Smaller games are creeping up to serve these places,
and they're very much about craftsmanship.
They're very much about craftsmanship, and that's rising up at the same time as these mega blockbuster games. So, of course, it's a concern, and it sucks. It's been that way for a while. I don't think it's gonna ruin games, and more importantly, I don't see what you can do to stop it.
All right,
I think that's an interesting thing to relate to GDC, because this used to be for me the show where I got to go and see those IGF games, and there really wasn't so much other stuff going on that got drowned out, and it was the one place where you would go in those IGF games. I've never heard of this, or this is such a unique thing. And even the IGF games in the main competition are sort of blockbusters, you know? And it was the student stuff, or the Nuovo, I think it's called, the sort of even indie for indie.
Indie for indie.
And those are where the really exciting stuff is happening. And those are, you know, stuck in a corner, and I didn't have as much time this year to look at them as I would have liked, because there was so much other stuff going on. I think that speaks volumes.
IGF stuff was good, and it was interesting. I was a judge this year, and there was a lot of mobile stuff.
Yeah.
A lot more than usual. I mean, like, typically, I was a judge last year or the year before as well, and there was a lot of Flash games. And this year, there was, like, nearly every other game was, you know, there was an iPhone version at least, or it ran on iPhone or Android.
Access to the audience, man.
Yeah,
you've got
and it's the indie guys are going where the people are, and they have a very different mentality. And I think one thing about GDC, and you notice if you're following stuff on Twitter, that there are celebrities within the indie scene as well. And
for sure.
I wish I could remember his name, but the guy that made Minecraft, is everybody is talking. Yeah,
Notch.
Everyone is talking about him. Like Cliffy was talking about him. I think Tim Schafer mentioned him. And
he's
like,
as big. I was talking with somebody about this. I think for this GDC, actually, at any level, he's like super hot shit. He's like as hot as you can possibly
sold
be.
Sold a million units of a game that he hasn't finished yet.
Winning awards for a game that is technically not, I mean, it's what, an alpha? Now it's moved on to beta?
Yeah.
And he's already being, you know.
But that's a power of an amazing idea now, and that you can get it out there and you can sell it. That's the great thing. That's why I'm not so worried about when people say this stuff.
So the second thing he like brought up was that he's concerned where the next generation of master game creators is going to come from, because in these big industry games, everything's specialized. Everybody's a specialist, and there's no one that has like rewarding feel for like the overview of the game.
So the guys that are pushing 50 now, the Peter Molyneux, Charles Cecil generation,
Richard Garriott
generation.
Ren and him, I was like,
they,
awesome.
You know, when you get a drink in them or whatever, they do kind of like talk about the old days when everyone was an auteur, right? And it was, I used to hum the song to a guy that knew how to play it on a keyboard. I did the art myself. I did the coding. And like, it was all in my head. I didn't have to write it down.
Yeah.
And mobile's letting them do that. And I think some of the smaller experiences are letting them do that. And I think what the IGF and what the organization around GDC is doing is allowing some of these guys to take ownership now on seeing an idea through. And then if they've got good leadership as well and they can lead, then they're going to be in a position to do what Iwata is talking about.
So if mobile's the answer, then why was his third thing this tremendous rant about?
Because he's trying to sell $40 portable games.
Yep.
So basically what he did was he showed how, you know, in the last year, he looked at across all the platforms of traditional video games, said there was something like 1,200 titles released into the channel, I think he said, something like that. And then he said, but, you know, in the mobile apps world, there were over 10,000, but 92% of them are free. And his big quote was that the value of video game software does not matter to them. Them being the people who are
behind.
Well, yes,
it does. And where do you think the cradle of creativity is right now?
Well, that's what I wanted to get with, where do you think this is coming from?
And they don't have to pay a license fee. They don't have to. All they have to do is like throw it into submission into an app store. I mean, if they're doing Android, it's like, you know, even cheaper and easier. And this is where the guys are riffing on the ideas. I mean, he should be embracing it.
And from a company whose whole strategic position in the last cycle has been get games to people that don't usually play them.
Yeah.
This is how you do that. You make it free. You make it easily accessible. You put it on devices that aren't dedicated gaming machines.
Mm-hmm.
That's how people get exposed to gaming that aren't already drinking the Kool-Aid.
There's certainly a tremendous volume of crap amongst the app world.
There's a tremendous volume of crap on every Nintendo platform that's ever been made.
I'm not
saying that's the predominant thing on those platforms, but it's, you get the good with the bad.
In any platform ever.
Right, exactly what I mean. Yes.
But there's a near as damn it unfiltered natural selection process in mobile where, you know, the only filter is submission into the app store, which is basically that it's got to work and not be too obnoxious. And then the market will sort it. I mean, it's the closest thing to a free market there is in gaming, right? You throw something out there, and if it's going to take, it'll take. And, you know, you can't do that on any Nintendo platform or any Microsoft platform. Or, I mean, you can do it on Windows, obviously, but not on 360 or, and even Windows Mobile, there's a big approval process. So he should be embracing it. And also, if he's got a problem with multifunction stuff, why is the 3DS a camera and a movie player and all this other shit, you know?
It's a dessert topping in a floor wax.
Yeah, that's funny too, because Reggie came out and was like, I want everyone to know the 3DS is about games. Now let me tell you about Netflix. Yeah, it's like really odd message.
One thing, Garnet, to hit your second point about the game creators thing, I was over
master
here
game creators
thinking about that. I think that is one thing interesting about Nintendo, to go back to Kono's talk. That guy who made the 3DS made Ice Hockey for the NES, which is a great game, one of my favorites. He made Super Mario Kart. Like, the guys at Nintendo, you find these guys whose names aren't even household names, and they have made amazing games across different genres. And, like, I think two things about that. I do think that once now you get known for some kind of game, especially, like, here in the West, it's like, okay, what's the type of game that you want from Cliffy B.
I mean, say, what's the next Cliff game?
Right.
You know what it's going to be, right?
So, but I mean, it would be really cool to see him try, like, get out of his comfort zone and try, like, a RPG or, like, a, you know, like a sports game or something weird. Like, And the thing that also occurred to me was this guy, it was a Japanese guy. He was telling the story of making ice hockey. Didn't really know what hockey was. Like, went and bought books about hockey. Did not even a fan of hockey. And
so, awesome.
And I constantly, we used to talk about this sometimes when we're up yours. It's like, why did I stop playing sports games? Like, I don't care about sports games anymore. I used to love them as a kid. And they were just more fun. And I think part of that was now, if you work on a football game, you live, eat, breathe, shit football. Like, football is your life.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If you brought in somebody who's like, well, you know, football is kind of cool, but they distill the elements that are actually interesting to somebody who's not necessarily watching Sunday 8 hours a day. I know this sounds like the foreign concept to you, Garnet, but there are these people that actually don't, you know, watch football all Saturday and Sunday.
I only watch all day Sunday.
It's become more simulation now, and it was a game before. It was fun to take Bo Jackson and score 147 points. That was fun as an 8-year-old kid. Yeah.
And
it's not
that there needs to be just one game for all people, right? It's like, let those people have their super hardcore man game, but I want, you know.
You want Blades.
Well, it's like, well, Blitz was kind of that, I think, was kind of a step back in that direction. But those type of games in different genres, maybe there's a first-person shooter version of that, you know, with somebody who like doesn't really like first-person shooters. It's like, well, I'm going to make one for people who aren't necessarily into that. It's going to take what are the cool elements and make them appeal to wider audiences. I don't know. I just think it would be cool if, like the guys at Nintendo, if people at other companies had these people like they tend to be older, right? The Will Wrights, the guys who did do these like, you know, crazy cross genre success.
Well, it used to be you were a video game designer, and you were a video game designer. You made whatever video game there was. You know, it wasn't so specialized, and the market wasn't so big that you had specialization. You know, you were there was like
clearly
not that many different ways to
make
a video
story.
Yeah. Wow, that's true.
I think you hit a good point, Mark. I mean, you look back at that sort of golden era, and even Madden, it hadn't gotten to the point where it was chasing the "we're going to be an absolute real simulation." Like Jeff said, you know, you had that "I'm going to take Bo Jackson and I'm going to rock up 147 points," and they've gotten so caught now, and it's probably an arms race with the power of the hardware and the power of the experience to where like we're going to make the game that you see. That's always their mantra, like on Madden now. Like every year, it's like, it's the game you see on Sunday.
Right.
And you're right. It's kind of gotten to a point where if you're not me, you probably don't care.
Well, but, and that's cool too. Like, I definitely don't want to get away. I think that's awesome that you can see a TV now that's far enough away. You are not sure if that's a video game or like an actual
football game. Wait, are the Rams winning? Then you can tell.
Oh, man. Hey, almost made the playoffs, man. Almost made the playoffs. Let's not talk about that. But I think that's great. Give that to that audience. It's just, I want to see more experiments. What was that, the baseball game recently where they did kind of try that? It was, you were like, I think EA made it where you were in like Times Square hitting home runs, basically.
Oh, I totally missed this.
You know what I'm talking about. Anyway, I want to see more of that kind of stuff, not even necessarily just in sports, but in different genres. And let's see if, you know, if the Cliffies and, you know, even Kojima has done a couple games outside of Metal Gear, but I feel like recently not.
Well, they've become the house of Metal Gear, yeah.
So, yeah, and, you know, he did Police Knots back in the day, and he did, and these are
That was a crazy one. I didn't think about that.
Cool games that are, they're not right in the same thing, but then it becomes a success, and you're like a slave to your success. So, I don't know.
What else has come up for you guys out of GDC that stood out as like, oh, I hadn't thought about that?
Well, I think picking up on what John said about mobile, I was impressed by how much mobile is in the show.
Oh, yeah.
Just on the show floor, how many developers there are specifically for mobile, how much recruiting there was in that space.
The engines, I mean, like Unity's coming along and it's going very mobile, and Unreal Engine 3, there's a new version of that here running on mobile that's doing more than the version they used for Infinity Blade. I mean, it's clear that a lot of studios are trying to push the tech that way, and then a lot of the recruiting, I mean, a lot of the recruiting seems to be mobile.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it's easy to see why, like the Chair Entertainment guys, the guys who made Infinity Blade, also made Shadow Complex for Xbox Live, and they talked about, they had a pretty good session, it sounds like.
I liked
like
that session.
Yeah. Oh, you were there?
Yeah, yeah. Donald gave a really good talk about the way they approached that and how they came at it of, well, you know, well, first of all, their design workshop that they do between games is intense. They have like a small team, and every member of the team has a day, and they have to present 30 game pitches. Can you imagine?
Wow.
Like a day, bang, 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 bang. Here's game pitch number one. Here's game pitch number two. And after that 2-week period, then they like pull down 20 of them and do one sheets on them. And they got to that point when Epic called and said, hey, you know what? We've been working on Unreal Mobile for, you know, a while. We'd like someone to do a game. Yeah. Can you do one in 5 months?
Well, so that's the thing. That's what I was getting to. They made that thing in 5 months. And it's already made more money, they said, too, than Shadow Complex had. And that was
because they didn't overthink it. Rather than trying to recreate a console experience, they just said, what's going to work with this control method,
exactly,
on this platform, and they made Punch-Out with swords, and it worked great.
And it doesn't. One of the great, I think, soundbite takeaways from it was that you on mobile, like, people don't play mobile games with sound.
Yeah. Nope.
And it's like something that everybody knows, and I'm like, yeah, you're right. I don't like when I'm playing Infinity Blade on my iPhone, I keep the sound.
I
off.
Love
I
the
don't have headphones.
The timing. Specific sections to how long it takes your legs to go numb on the toilet.
Right.
that was crazy. Yeah, that was one of his portable pillars. And the other thing was that it has to be playable with one finger.
Yeah,
right.
Because that's
because when you're mobile, you're moving around. You don't always have both hands free.
I love that as well. It scares me as somebody who is glad something like Shadow Complex exists.
Me too.
It scares me that it's such a. I worry of the pendulum swinging too far the other direction, mm-hmm. and us losing these other more complicated experiences that I really cherish.
It's so. Like, yeah, but everybody's like, well, why do you hate social games? Why? There's no reason to hate social games. Social games are great. And it's like, yeah, no, I don't hate them on their own. I hate that they what they represent, which is taking resources away because it's such easy, huge amounts of money. And like here, it's mobile and it's social games, like those Facebook games. It's not happening now, but it's starting to. I mean, it's not like Sega or Capcom or something is like, well, we're not going to make Street Fighter V. We're going to make it for Facebook instead. But that day might be coming. But that day might not be too far off where it's like, well, this is where the easy money is. Let's not do that project this year. Let's do like 5 more social or mobile games. I absolutely 100% agree with you.
There are a plethora of games here at GDC 2011, and when we come back on the other side, we will switch gears and talk about games for a little while so that we don't completely drive you crazy with all this esoteric video game tomfoolery and nonsense. Stick around. We'll be back in just a minute. Hey, Bulletstorm, Killzone 3 coming up, Homefront, a lot of games to choose from, and you know what? Why buy them? You can always rent. It's easy. You just go and sign up on Gamefly.com. We ship them straight to your door. No late fees ever. 7,000 games in stock. Put them on your queue. Get them sent over to you. Jeff Mattis is now laughing because I can read from the script. Go ahead. Tell us about it, brother.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, rent some games, man. Do it.
Go there to the joystick in the top right-hand corner. Click on that. Enter in your code confirmed, and we will give you 2 months for the price of one. So you sign up. It's I think it's like $16, and you'll get 2 months of service on us. Code confirmed. All right, and we're back. We gave Jeff a little breather so we could bring in Miss Ariel Angelotti from Pixel Junk.
Hey, Q Games.
Q Games, sorry. You're a producer on Pixel Junk Shooter, right?
Yes, Shooter 2.
And she also hosts the awesome Q Games radio podcast.
Yeah, Pixel Junk Radio. Get your facts right.
Whatever.
Wow.
Where could one go? On the internet someplace.
Where could one go to find that podcast should they want to listen to it?
You can go on iTunes and also YouTube. We're up on YouTube. We have kind of a video. Well, it's not a video, strictly speaking, but we do have still images. Sometimes
given
featuring
the way that podcast goes, this is going to get even better.
Sometimes shark genitalia has been known to crop up. Random pictures. Yeah, yeah.
If you listen
where
to it, Mark, you should listen to
it. Shark genitalia while we're coming.
Google shark genitalia.
It's Japan, John. It's Japan.
There's going to be the fish market. It's like right there. It's, of course, it's delicacy, of course.
Oh, dear.
So Pixel Junk Shooter 2 came out this week.
Yes.
And we're all playing it, of course.
Yes. I want to know what you think.
Well, when you're not beating the crap out of me at the game... So, notoriously, last year I went over to Japan, was in Kyoto, and Ariel, I met her, and she was who I had to play the one-on-one multiplayer with. And she did not honor the tried and true
Let the Wookiee win.
Here's the thing. I was easy on you at first. Yeah, because we did like a couple matches, mm-hmm. and then I decided to open up that can that I reserved.
Sometimes, Garnet, like I've seen it happen, especially in fighting games where the person is trying to let the journalist win, and the journalist is so shitty and clueless at the game that they just win on accident. Could that have been the case? No?
Well, I mean, yeah.
I think the silence speaks volumes. Yeah. All right, so Garnet, what do you think about the game?
So there's two parts to it, obviously. There's this crazy multiplayer addition that they did to the game that is... I'm curious where the balance... The question I want to ask most about the game is, where do you guys set the balance for the competitive nature of the game? Because Shooter 1, to me, was more of in the vein of many of the other Q Games games of a sort of not... It's not flower, obviously. You're not just like fooling around and like in this, you know, mystical Zen land. But it was much more of a relaxed sort of get in sync with the game, explore the environments, rescue the minor guys. And I think both the single player game and the multiplayer game reflect a much more competitive nature to this game.
Well, I do think it is more challenging. And I think that people have been responding to that and have been liking it. Now, if you're jumping into Shooter 2 after playing the original, it makes sense. You are swallowed by a giant worm monster at the end of the first game.
Spoiler.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Spoiler, by the way. Totally. Sorry about that. Yeah. 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 Download Shooter 1. Yeah. on the PlayStation Store now.
And how much? Yeah.
Actually, I'm not sure. Right now.
You guys should put it on sale.
Yeah. Well, maybe we might have some plans for something like that sometime soon. So, yeah.
Good idea. All
right. Funny, a game that has British developers attached to it has something to do with the bowels of an animal.
Yeah. Yeah. Dylan Cuthbert, the founder of Q. He likes talking about sphincters
You're
and
saying
bowels.
We're very scatological.
No, that was me.
Okay.
That was me. I'm all I'm into sharks, although not in that way.
Wait. What?
We're back. Remember the mid-break shark genitalia thing? Yeah, that's back. It's now crossed over. Somewhere Dylan is now going awesome meme success.
Just friends. Shark They're just
genitalia.
Friends.
Oh, dear.
Gary on the shark.
We should spread it around the whole podcast sphere. Everyone just think we could start a shark genitalia podcast.
So you're in the bowels of a worm.
So you're jumping in right after the end of the first game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And... You know, it's a little more claustrophobic. You're inside a creature. You know, you're encountering.
And is the whole game inside?
No,
the
that's
creature?
Just the first world.
Okay.
So yeah, it does. Spoiler. It does open up, and
She's
and
just
while
rooting.
You know,
I know, really. I'm just excited that the bowels open up.
Oh, and they do. Mm-hmm. They do.
So it's more challenging because it. What? Because why?
I just think that it's a much more. I'm trying
Here's
to think
the thing.
Right.
It
the first
does...
level, right off the bat, the first level is not a cakewalk. It's not hard, but it's not you're just going to get accustomed to flying your little ship and rescuing dudes. Like, it throws you the acid, which is a real nice change up on lava. I mean, you know, they had lava in the first game, and so you had the heat dynamic. And, of course, your ship gets too hot, and it overheats, and then you have to go cool it off in the water.
Right.
But that was like a slow burn. So, like, the heat would build up slowly, and then it dissipated slowly. So you're, like, back and forth there. Acid's the opposite end of the time spectrum. It's the same thing. It's just that the acid gets on you, and very quickly you have to wash it off. And once you've washed it off, it goes right away. Mm-hmm. So you have to get accustomed to that, and it has a risk-reward nature shift to it as well, because when you're in the acid, there are acid creatures that you have to, you know, of course you get acid on you. You need water. You shoot the acid creatures, and you get water. So I'm just saying that, like, you're constantly pushing the player a lot harder. And it's the same thing in multiplayer, because it's one-on-one, super competitive, and it has that same sort of, it really gets me going in a much more competitive way than, I don't know, when I played Shooter, I was just sort of like, I'm chilling.
You don't think it kind of gets to that, though, later on in the game? Did you beat it?
I have not beat it. No, I've only gone through the first bowels of the monster.
Okay.
Once the bowels loosen up, the whole game
it just goes in the crapper. Okay.
Which may well be possible.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, it does open up. It is, you know, the first world is challenging, but I think once you get accustomed
to
that
difficulty.
So was
that, I mean, I guess what I'm asking, how conscious was that decision? Was it like, oh, you know what, we really want to make something that's more competitive, or here's what we liked out of Shooter, but we could, like, push it harder in this direction?
It was a conscious decision, yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
You still wiping tables with your online skills?
Actually, I do have a confession to make.
You're not playing it.
So I was playing the game a lot when you came by, and I was really good. And
rematch.
I bet you could kick my ass right now.
Rematch.
To be perfectly honest.
Awesome.
Yeah. I got really bad.
Have you checked out the online
battle? At online battle, I can still go through single player just like, you know, before, like normal, but oof.
So the online battle thing is where you have, you know, the whole thing is you're picking up miners out of the caves, and the online battle thing has these maps where they have each person has a capture zone, and you have to capture the little miner dudes, drag them back to your capture zone, and drop them there. One person's on offense, the other person's on defense, and then you switch sides, and then it's like best two out of three, isn't that right?
Well, it depends. The turn changes. I mean, it depends because, you know, you can go into extra rounds.
Someone always wins.
Yeah. Well, you can tie.
So the kicker is that when you're on offense and going and trying to steal the dudes, the other person can't see you. They can only see you when you're in their direct cone of vision in front of them. So you're constantly playing this little cat and mouse game, and then once you play the cat and mouse game, you're suddenly in these like quick firefights that last, I don't know, all of 2 or 3 seconds. And the coup de grace is that you have 3 special weapons chosen from...
20 special. Yeah, I appreciate this. Garnet's totally doing my job for me right now. I'm just kicking back.
Garnet Bullet Point Lee.
Yeah.
He just didn't even memorize it. He just wrote it down. He's just reading it. He's never actually played it since he saw you.
Choose from over 20 weapons.
20 weapons.
So, 300 levels.
10 maps.
Okay. Not 300.
No. The weird thing to me is that as much as I like Shooter and Shooter 2, I'm not sure I like the one-on-one.
Really?
Yeah. It's just... It also disrupts.
Too competitive for you guys?
Yeah.
I think what the listener is probably thinking right now is that Garnet is... He just kind of sucks at this game.
Garnet got beaten by a girl.
I know.
She knows your audience better than you too, Garnet.
Awesome. This is going so well. I'm very, very,
you should
very
host.
Happy. Next thing I'm going to do is the Luke thing. Ariel, your game is really awesome. How awesome is your game?
It's totally awesome.
All right. Now that we know how awesome the game is. What else you guys been playing?
Well, let's talk. I'm curious what else is going on over at Q. Like, what can you guys say about
right
other
now,
things?
The only thing that we can really say is that Pixel Junk Lifelike is still, you know, in the works.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And what is that?
It's kind of a... I mean, all I can really say at this point is that it's a music visualizer game.
Mm-hmm.
But we're doing some really awesome stuff with it, and I think that
like
Garnet
a kind
of
Jeff Minter
of
kind
people.
Of thing?
Mm-hmm.
Like a Jeff Minter kind of... Remember him? Color Space? Used to do stuff back in the old... Am
no,
I just showing my age?
Blank.
Oh, my
no,
God.
Yeah, no,
you remember
it?
Jeff Minter
oh, yeah,
stuff,
yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah. The Xbox stuff.
But post-Lamatron and
that was
Color Space
was
the big one, yeah?
2000 and...
Yeah, I'd say it's similar. I mean, did you see the TGS trailer for it?
That's awesome.
Wait, was that the one with the mushrooms? Were they?
Yes.
Yeah,
where
they're out, in the forest, and they're like
pulling
the Move controller out of the ground, like it's some kind of weird obelisk. And then
that was pretty awesome, actually.
That was very awesome.
Yeah,
and Omar even rocked the outfit one day.
I was like, "What? Okay."
Have you seen the promotional videos we've been putting out for Shooter 2?
Yeah, like these are also awesome too. They have like these crazy, like. Dude being interviewed like he's like in a he's one of the survived miners from Pixel Junk, and he's like smoking a cigarette, and it's like a dark room, but he has like the interrogation light on him, and he's like does like the really weird like it was terrible down there, and it's all translates really
did
cool.
You see the second one though?
No, I didn't see the second
okay
one.
You need to see the second one.
All right,
you need to see the second one, everyone out there. It's called Survivor Files. YouTube it. Yeah.
It's too bad you guys couldn't time the release with that Chilean miners thing. Like, although that might have backfired, I guess, ultimately.
Could have gone wrong.
We refer to them internally as survivors.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Not miners. Because they're miners, but they're also scientists. Yeah. Yeah.
They're survivors.
So that's why it's
very positive and
upbeat.
You might want to be careful about that, because that is, I think, a CBS show, and this is the CBS.
You're in the CBS building.
Office.
Yeah.
I think our legal team are on this floor.
Yeah, I mean, I think the survivors already registered.
So John, what have you been playing that doesn't have Pixel Junk in the title?
I've actually been playing Old Kamiden.
Ah.
For the DS.
Oh, the US version or the Japanese?
No, I don't think it's out here.
Why, Mark? Japanese. Did you have something to do with the...
Yeah.
I wish I did. I did not, sadly. Uh-huh. No.
Yeah, it's...
Would I like it if I didn't play Okami?
You haven't played Okami?
That's
or is
that's,
this a hypothetical?
No, that I did not play Okami, really? Which is like really like everyone was like ragging on me because I inadvertently referred to a Tamarasu as a male dog and it's a she dog. And I like and then I like had to cop to the fact that actually as much as I always wanted to play Okami, I never played it.
And kids get really like I was in a room with a bunch of 7 and 8 year olds and they were playing Marvel versus Capcom and they were like very assertive on the fact that it's a she. She kicked his ass, Dad. Not him.
Oh, that's good that they know that.
Awesome.
Well, the one thing I would say about Okami, and this leads in, I've only played 5 minutes of Okami Den, sadly, because I want to play more. But the thing about Okami that people who really liked it will tell you is that it starts slow. A lot of people give up on it starting off. You're talking to a lot of people, and there's a lot of exposition and explaining stuff. And I was a little disappointed that the first. Whatever I played, maybe 10 minutes of Okami Den seemed similar. It seemed like there was a lot of exposition. It didn't get you right into it. It's very conscious of explaining everything step by step.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But I, like I said, I only played 10 minutes. I really, really, Okami's one of my favorite games.
Yeah, I love that game.
Now I know I didn't play it.
Why?
Because it was one of Mark's favorite games. You know I don't play his favorite games.
Now you're just lashing out pathetically, trying to get back at me, Garnet. Your chance will come. Just
I'm not
wait
trying
for
to get
it.
Back at you. I'm just like, I'm copping to that because I haven't played Dead Space yet either.
I haven't either. That's on my pile of shame.
I haven't played Dead Space. I haven't played Dead Space 2, and I haven't played Okami. Then.
I can't.
Oh, wow.
I haven't played Dead Space. But Okami then. So how is it? What do you think?
I'm kind of conflicted, to be honest. It's kind of got Super Mario 64 syndrome. You have a 3D game on the DS, and you're trying to control your character with the D-pad. And it's kind of clunky.
Is there a lot of platforming in it or something?
No. It's just moving around can be kind of a chore.
Mm. Really?
Yeah.
The camera is a pain.
The camera, so it's fixed when you're not on the world map.
Right, when you're in combat?
Like in like a town, it is fixed.
Okay.
But when you go to the overworld, you can manipulate the camera by touching the screen. There are arrows on the touch screen. Yeah, because the right and left trigger.
Her was to me making a little grimace. Because that sounds a little grim.
Yeah, it is a little grim. The left and right trigger buttons bring up the ink, like where you're drawing with your.
Right.
All right, we're worrying about mechanics. And isn't this a game where we're supposed to be excited about like the. Like the experience of getting into it and the art of it and the drawing.
Well, okay, so the art is fantastic. The music is as great as it ever was with some new stuff so far. I'm only 2 hours in, so full disclosure.
So you can't use the, but I mean, I think mechanics are important. You can't appreciate the artistry if you're constantly being distracted by the camera. I thought that I remembered, because I don't remember having a problem with the camera, but again, I only played it a little bit. Was it not like a DS kind of first-person shooter where you're moving around and then you use the touch screen anywhere and you can just move it back and forth and control the camera?
Well, here's the thing with the touch screen is that I thought that Okami would be a great game to play on the DS. I remember thinking that when I was playing the original. Oh,
right.
It makes so much sense. You're drawing. so it would make sense to put a game out on the DS. The only problem is because they put it on the DS, they're thinking, now we can have them, the player use... draw more elaborate shapes. Mm-hmm. So you're outlining a lot of stuff. You're outlining the stars in the sky to call forth the gods to get new powers. Well, it's kind of unwieldy. I kind of like the quick and rough.
Maybe you just don't draw very well.
that's kind of true, actually.
Is there some stuff that you do like about it? Is there stuff from Okami? Are you an Okami fan?
Yeah, I am. I mean, it's really beautiful. I mean, to be honest, Chibi-Tarasu is the cutest darn thing ever. I think, honestly, I think the cuteness...
She's just a cute little button.
She's
just a cute little button.
So cute. I feel like that makes up for the controls.
Wow, that's a lot of
to
cute.
Be honest, that's it's a lot of cute. but I'm a sucker for those kinds of things. Like, throw me a bone. Throw me a bone.
That's cool. I mean, I think, people into, like, Zelda, the people I know who really liked Okami, the full console game, were also people who really appreciated Zelda.
Yeah.
And having, like, a handheld, I think the hope for Okami then anyway, it's like a handheld Zelda. Those
Yeah, yeah.
don't come along very often. I mean, except from Nintendo. They came along kind of often. This maybe a little too often on the DS, but yeah, a Zelda with a different spin.
How much do you think? I was just thinking about the new Mario that like ever so briefly was mentioned by Iwata during that 3DS keynote.
Tanuki tail.
Yeah. Tanuki.
It's the Tanuki suit.
Yeah, well, right. But his big deal was like, well, you know, one of our big things has been it's always all the way back to Mario 64, which you talked about there. It's been hard for the player to judge where in 3D space the blocks are. And this solves that. And I was like, well, it solves it from a perspective of looking at it, but it still doesn't make it any easier to like manipulate. Yeah, right, yeah. right. So,
well, the trick there is, too, if it solves it because of the 3D-ness, how do you play it when it's in 2D mode? Right,
all
because every 3DS game has to be able to be played in 2D mode. So, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I hope they have some solution. And just to be clear, I'm totally guessing about that Tanuki suit thing.
Come on.
Either they want you to think that, or that's it. So,
and knowing Nintendo, they want you to think that because that's where they're going with it. I mean, that would be a tremendous tease to show that and get those fans excited, and then be like, "Oh, I'm sorry, we were kidding. It's actually something completely different."
I thought that, what did everybody think of the Zelda trailer? Did you guys see the Skyward Sword?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, did this just come out?
They put a new, at the Iwata keynote, they showed a new trailer.
What'd you think? I haven't seen it yet.
Well, I thought it was pretty funny. His comment is, we've been working really hard with Motion Plus and the controls are coming along nicely. Well, of course you're going to say that. So what? I love Zelda, so I was never on the I don't like Skyward Sword. I actually never understood why people like responded to it like that. I had fun with it when they showed it at E3.
I was skeptical of it at E3. I mean, the look of it was a little off. I felt the colors were just weird. It's like kind of cartoony, but kind of realistic.
Now that part I'll agree with. I think it lacks character in there a little bit. I don't think it doesn't have as much character as some of the other Zeldas.
Yeah, I don't know. And it wasn't that, and I played it at E3 too, and it wasn't that there was anything bad. There were a couple cool novel uses, like confusing the eyeball on the door. You can see a video of this if you don't know what I'm talking about, but you use the Wii Motion Plus to make this eyeball on a door move around until it gets confused, and then you can kill it. The trailer, I think, showed a couple more cool novel uses of the Wii controller for puzzles and stuff. Hopefully it's not like obnoxiously so. But I thought the combat actually looked really cool.
Yeah,
that's the thing
that
got me
excited. How much we like Infinity Blade, because it's something easy and you like swipe. And you know, motion games are almost always at their best when you're just doing something that is sort of representative, not necessarily trying to duplicate
the sword in Wii Sports Plus is always a good laugh.
That's the Chambara, that's the best part of Wii Sports Resort.
Absolutely.
I love that.
Yeah.
Just toying with them, just like holding up, just like, bam! And then you just like smack them on the side of the face.
That
is the best. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. Sold me on that. And then the Frisbee also of Wii Sport Resort sold me on, man, if they
Frisbee's
get this into Zelda, like as the boomerang or whatever, this will be awesome. So I hope that's like a proof of Nintendo's own little proof of concept of Zelda.
That
Wii Sports
cool.
Resort, yeah.
I have faith. I'm not disillusioned with the Zelda series. I don't think Twilight Princess was as good as 64 or Wind Waker, but I still really enjoyed it. I don't think I'm ever going to be off the Zelda bandwagon.
She's a fangirl anyway.
I'm a fangirl,
We found out in the break that she's a big Koji Bro fangirl too, so you're just a bandwagoner. I see how it is. Hey, Mark, before we like move on to other games, so of my backlog games, which one, when I do play one of them, Dead Space or Okami?
I would say Dead Space.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I would think that I'd like Okami way better.
No. I mean, I don't think you'll dislike
I think you'll get impatient with Okami.
It's a long game.
It is long. It's deceptively long. You think it's going to be completely over, and it's not. There's still
20 hours, 30 hours, 40, 50, 60.
But Garnet, the window, I mean, Dead Space 3, I'm sure they're working on it now. Like, are we going to be having this discussion next year?
I've always felt bad because it's a game that you really, really, really enjoyed so much.
Yes.
And I'm curious, like, is Dead Space 2 living up to that for you?
Well, part of the reason I really liked Dead Space is because I felt like it was doing a lot of new stuff. I mean, within the survival horror genre, at least anyway, it was definitely a refinement of a lot of like Resident Evil 4 mechanics. But why I wanted you to play it then was because it's like, wow, they're doing a lot of really cool things here, and this is new and it's fresh and it's polished and it's got these Western sensibilities, but it's coming from this like really awesome, you know, Japanese survival horror gameplay.
The monsters look silly though.
The monsters are,
well, that's the biggest turnoff to me from day one of seeing
this is
Dead
a big,
Space.
Big problem in, I think, all horror video games is that they over-silly the monsters. They make them overly complicated, and it's all like tentacles and muscles and shit coming out of its mouth and like...
And spiky bits.
And then it's overlit as well, so you get a good look at how stupid it looks.
Right, yeah.
I think it's puking acid on you.
Oh, lovely. Lovely.
Like the some of the bosses actually in Dead Space 2, one thing that I'm not really a big fan of in Dead Space 2 is like the boss design. It looks just kind of like a big sinewy, like you don't really know what it is. When you finally kill it, it's like a bunch of dead bodies all stuck together and crazy and whatever, but you can't really see that in the boss. It just looks like a lot of the enemies look kind of similar.
I don't want to see,
and they're all kind of mashed.
The horror of it would be, I think, if they down, I mean, this is something that not a lot of games have done well, and that if they sort of didn't light it as well, so that you were getting more hints of movement, and because there are times in Dead Space 2 where the sort of the shiny goriness is sort of like glistening in the darkness.
Right.
And then as you're shooting, everything lights up and shit catches fire. And then suddenly I can see all of it in all its ridiculous glory.
Well, but I was going to...
So it's like Doom 3?
No.
In that regard?
No, because it's more sort of consistently lit than in Doom 3. You know, in Doom 3 it was all little sort of like flashes and then... I mean, and things died really fast in Doom 3 as well. So you didn't get to look at it for long. In this, I mean, the bosses, they're big and they take a while.
Yeah.
But it did make me think, but here's the reason like I clicked to that was because I remember playing Doom 3 and it being really dark all the time, right? But then you never got that, like what you're just sort of hinting at, of like the like shadowy figures and things coming at you at the dark. And you never got that intimidation, right? Because it was always just like, boom, monster calls, like, oh, here's big dude, shoot him.
You know, in Dead Space, is that it's best for me is when it plays on the kind of, they're horror movie cliches, but it's the walking up to the reinforced glass window and... you know, the thing kind of slapping up against the window and making you jump,
right?
And like blood streaks, and there'll be things that, you know, you're like, okay, well, I've seen that before, but it works really, really well. But it's when you get a prolonged look at something horrific that it kind of loses its integrity a little bit.
I think to your point, I think they use sound cues amazingly well too. Like especially the first game, they you know, there's like a pulse that's making you uncomfortable, or there's like a loud industrial fan or something, and then it goes quiet. Or in Dead Space 2, you can hear kind of muffled sounds behind a lot of people's, and they're all different, behind these like a living quarters section of the station and stuff. They do all of these things to scare you and to build tension and stuff with sound. I actually thought the lighting, because you talked about the lighting, I actually thought the lighting was something that they did a good job of, just because they use it if it was a there's parts of and even more so in Dead Space 2 where if it was lit normally it would probably be another space corridor, but they actually, just through lighting, if it's like a rotating like siren, I don't know, what do you call it when it's just a light, you know what I'm talking
little
about,
red flashing light thing,
or that's like these sections where it lights up as you walk through and then goes dark right after you pass. You're up on like the solar array or something. Oh, I just did a spoiler myself.
Oh,
I hate myself. Uh-oh. But yes, you go on a solar array at one point. Anyway, I thought the stuff they do with lighting and sound is really great, like the first game. But Garnet, back to my point, is like it's losing the reason to play it because everybody else is taking lessons from it and appropriating it to their games, which I think is great.
Yeah.
But one of the best parts about that game is kind of everything happens within the game. The cinemas, quote-unquote cinemas, especially in the first game, take place in front of your character as just like a floating thing. Never wrestled control away from you, even your UI when you're in your inventory.
Oh, yeah, the whole sort of like the mapped onto the wrist thing and all the UI stuff is really...
Health meter on your back, kind of stuff. That was really cool.
It's very elegant.
Completely elegant, just really awesome. You're in an... there are like... quote-unquote loading elevators. They're not it's not that the loading's bad at all, but you go in there, pull up your inventory, move around some health packs or whatever while you're... It never bothered me at all, and like just that simple thing, it was such a like an awesome, elegant step forward, I thought, and it made sense in the fiction. All of this stuff was not just tacked on they made it make sense in the fiction.
And at the time, it was unique, and I think we're starting to see people steal more. And it, weird things stealing from it. I mean, I think Split Seconds stole a bunch of stuff from it in terms of UI, like bringing stuff onto the car and like not relying on you looking elsewhere on the screen. And I think people have realized that, hey, it's a game. We can, you know, we can riff on the idea a little bit.
Yeah, maybe we don't need, you know, money up here in the corner and your health up here in the corner. And I mean, in some games, it's ridiculous. Like the UI ends up taking up half the screen, but it's so much more immersive for this this scary game like that when that happens. So just play the damn game already. Yeah. Darn it. All right.
Buy the PS3 version, do the concerted effort through. You can do Dead Space 1, Extraction, and then go straight into Dead Space 2.
All right.
Because Extraction's very good, too, for an on-rails thing.
I need to play that.
It's really fun.
I need to play that.
That's what I hear.
You want to do it with the move, though, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It would be way more fun.
Oh, yeah.
Way.
Right.
Yeah. Actually, I really like that move sharpshooter thing.
Yeah.
That's kind of fun to play with. What were you saying? We should do it?
Well, so it's been on my pile of shame. Dead Space, the original, has been on my pile of shame for almost a year now. I bought it a year ago, and I haven't been able to get to it.
You know, I just... All right, maybe.
Yeah.
How about can I give you a solid maybe?
Would it be a test
in a few weeks?
Maybe is the default answer. You giving me the maybe doesn't really. I mean, you're not saying outright no. That's not really giving me anything.
Yeah. I'll bug you about it.
Oh, good.
Because, yeah, I'll get to it and I'll bug you about it and say, okay, we're gonna play this.
The girl beat the damn game. You still haven't played it. Awesome.
Yeah.
That's gonna go really well. Yes. Now you found out how to shave me into anything, Mark.
I will say one complaint that you guys should know going in that I hear more now that Dead Space 2 came out is I'm finding a surprising number of people that are like, yeah, Dead Space 1, I really liked it and I wanted to like it, but I felt like it was all on this ship and it was too much similar environments and stuff like that. And actually they had a session here to bring it back to GDC where their art director, who's got to be a fucking genius because that game looks amazing. That's another whole nother story, but an excellent part about that game. He was saying he showed like a level from the start of the game and a level later in the game. And I don't think that I'm ruining anything to say you spend most of the game on the one ship. And so it can look maybe more similar. It's not like a lava level and a snow level and that sort of thing. So, but within those confines, it's kind of like Alien takes place, you know.
And you've seen like Event Horizon, the movie, right?
Oh, where God.
You know what's weird is like, you guys know I really don't like horror movies. They kind of like, that's one of my things that kind of freaks me out.
Really?
But for some,
this is a horror game, right?
Yeah.
That's
what
I was saying.
I love it.
Oh, I don't like that at all. I don't like to be scared. I'm like,
seriously?
Why would
oh, man.
Why would I want to be, why do I want to go to a movie to be
it's
scared?
It's thrilling.
It's not thrilling. It's scary.
No.
But for some reason, I really like Event Horizon.
Why?
I have no idea.
What? You just like that scene where it's like, oh, and it's like hell, and there's
it's
like
awful.
Body parts engorging.
It's well,
barbed
maybe
wire pulling on their eyes.
It's
and
awful.
I think the concept is awesome.
That's what it is. I think the concept is
awesome,
really freaking
is horrible.
Cool.
Horrible.
It just descends into ridiculous.
so
Garnet, actually, if
I can't tear myself away from it though. Like Event Horizon comes on, and I'm like,
it's on TV a lot.
I can't not watch it. I'm like. And it just freaks me out. And then I have nightmares for 2 days. And I'm like, why did I watch a freaking movie again?
Would it help if I told you that Dead Space began development as an Event Horizon game?
What? Really?
No.
No.
Okay.
Seriously?
Oh. No, not seriously. I'm just asking if it would help. If it would make Garnet play this damn game.
Just
yeah.
Who's your favorite actor? Do you have a favorite actor and actress?
Sam Neill.
In the movie?
No, just in general.
Oh, God. I don't know. Can I?
Because whoever it is, they're in Dead Space.
You have to get to the end, but then they appear and they give a
so
message
you gotta,
about
you
to
play
you.
Aww,
yeah.
That's nice. It's
Garnet,
finished.
Garnet
it's very good. Thank you so much.
They talk about Weekend Confirmed too. It's weird. It's
oh wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Okay. That's a good place to take a little break. Thank you very much, Ariel, for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
I'm very curious to see what you guys are working on next. So I'm going to speculate. You are out of here, but I'm going to speculate some about what QMA Games might be up to. So look, and this is totally wild speculation, so I'm just waiting to see if I can get a response. Let's see. They've done a bunch of DSiWare stuff that no one knows about. Or no one, people do know about, but they don't play because they
she's
make great DSiWare
games.
Covering
her face so we can't see whether
no,
she's smiling
I
just, or
not. I have no poker face, so I'm trying to be careful.
And there's a big new DS product coming. You would think that Nintendo might want some stuff for that.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. And I still want to know.
Who knows? I have no idea.
I still want to know what happened to Dungeon.
Dun dun dun.
I have no idea, Garnet.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely
are we
idea.
Talking about more games after the next break?
Would you rather talk about games as an experience?
Oh, because I want to talk about Bulletstorm with Mark.
Yeah, I want to be here when John talks about
it. All right, so then Mark, can we twist your arm for you to stay another segment?
All right.
All right, so Mark's going to stay another segment. Wait, we'll talk about Bulletstorm.
It's a half an hour, right?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah. All right, so there you go. We'll talk about Bulletstorm and more when we come back on the other side.
We can confirm. You know how it works.
No, I don't know how it works.
Dots. You know, hit him over and over, sort of.
Dots. You are running us over those dots.
You know how it works.
No, I don't know how it works.
Hit him over and over, sort of.
Dots.
Dude, you are hauling us over those dots.
Dots.
They're close and they're sleeping.
Dots.
How do you wake them up?
Do they tell you going to
dots?
How do you wake them up? Do they tell you going to dots?
We can confirm. It's really good.
It's
really powerful.
We can confirm.
It's really good.
It's
really powerful.
Wow, it works.
No, I don't know how it works. Dots only appear in certain places.
Dots. Grab a power pellet and rock it through that.
Dots.
We can confirm.
It's really good. It's bad.
We can confirm.
All right, he dropped the Pac-Man remix. I like the Pac-Man remix. We've juggled chairs. Mark's sticking around, so we brought Jeff into the room so we could just sit here and watch.
Screw you guys! I'm in the back! This room is incredibly large!
That's what she said.
Oh, you know, it's just, I'm going to leave now.
And there we have Mr. Zav D'Amatos, who's joined us from Toronto, working for us at Shaq News. But prior to that, working with John Davison.
Yes, I get around.
Whoa.
Wait a minute.
That's what she said.
Slut.
It's like, I threw that one at you. Don't do it again.
Mark stuck around so we could talk about the hot games of 3 weeks ago, as Zav put it. But yes.
That's moving up, though, because we were just talking about Dead Space for like an hour. Whoa. So, yeah, and Dead Space 2. So, yeah.
Dude, like, it's the GDC show, but there are a ton of games here, and we've seen a ton of games, and people like it when we talk about games. And John wants to talk about Bulletstorm because. Because
I want to talk about it for a variety of reasons, because I'm really conflicted about it.
That sounds like Zav's review.
A little bit. So I mean, what part of it?
Well, I'm really conflicted with the fact that it appears to have been designed for a 14-year-old.
Right. I mean,
old?
And yet a 14-year-old isn't allowed to buy it. But the gameplay mechanics are actually really, really good, and I just wish it wasn't as embarrassing. I was playing it, and my wife was in the room, and it made me feel really embarrassed.
What happened?
Well, just because of the whole, just like the, I mean, it's, I mean, what's some, a word beyond gratuitous? I mean, like the swearing in it is just so bad.
Is it like Duke Nukem? It's like, eat shit and die.
Yeah,
like,
but
no
only,
subtle.
Only,
no.
So this is what I want to do now. So, like, it starts off and it's like, hey, you know, motherfucker.
Yeah.
You're a stupid dick face. And then it runs out of compound swear words.
Right.
And then they just randomly mash swear words together. So, hey, shit fucker.
And the worst is the general or the commander who just he creates words that I didn't even know existed. Like it's silly. But the thing that I found with the game is that the first half of it is really that 14-year-old, you know, that's where the 14-year-old would love it because it's a lot of that. But then the closer you get to the end, I feel like it just starts becoming less of that, and it starts to become more of a, okay, we know that this is now, you know, an experience that you've sort of gotten used to it. I think they pepper it really hard in the beginning because they're like, we want you to get used to it so it doesn't really affect you in the end. But by the end, you're just sort of like, you become, it doesn't really matter to you anymore.
Right. Can you guys talk a little bit about the gameplay? Because I see written about it is everybody saying like, it plays great. Like,
so there are two parts of the gameplay that I was really impressed with. One was the fact that it has this push-pull physics mechanic. So you've got the leash where you pull things towards you, and the kick where you kick things away from you, and then the way that interacts with the environment, and the gun. So you can grab someone from a distance, yank them towards you, like, and hit other people on the way, and then kick them both, and then shoot them, and there's lots of blood.
And the feel of doing that is
very kind of, you know, very visceral kind of feeling thing. But then there's also the whole, there's a bit of a social game mechanic thing with the whole skill shot system and the way that it ranks you against people that you know. So it's riffing on some of the ideas that we've all responded to in things like Geometry Wars, and where it's ranking you, it's not doing global rankings, it's just doing, okay, you versus, you know, Zav, and okay, he's this much better than you. And then so you start to play
what
the game
you think
differently.
He's that much better than me.
I have a variety of reasons that I can get into.
And then so the skill shot stuff is this, like, using the leash and the kicks and the, so it's like, can you grab someone from a distance and skewer them on a particular piece of scenery? Right. So there's one for, like, skewering them against a cactus or skewering them against a fence. And then there's kicking them into something. And then it's combos and juggles of those things and then shooting them or performing a skill shot, like doing all that stuff with the leash and the kick and then a one-shot headshot to kill them.
And that's for points?
Right. So it escalates and there's a currency in the game that the more of that you do, and it, like, it's so lame the way it's like you put this thing on your hand and it, like, I don't know what it, like, melds with your nervous system. Yeah. Or, some bullshit. I have no idea. But anyway, as part of that,
you really didn't buy into the lore behind Bulletstorm.
The lore is fucking ridiculous. Anyway, it's like jacked into your nervous system, and as part of that, you're now connected to the government sanctioned skill shot ranking bullshit.
Yeah. Oh my god, they actually have,
like,
bullshit.
Oh my god, it's fucking like now it's like, because you've got this thing attached to your hand.
Wow.
It's like now when you leash these, like, pods that are everywhere, you jack into the government. What's the government called? They have some, like, real kind of, like, Nazi kind of name.
It's probably like FUCK or something. Yeah. It's probably ridiculous.
And it's like, and then so you sync with this thing and it's keeping track of this stuff that you're doing and ranking you against the government database. And it's just like,
brilliant. Tell me there's a novelization of this that I can buy, please. Is there not?
And everyone talks like this. Okay. And it's not just, hey, motherfuckers. Hey, motherfucker.
Right. Did John just pull one of his voices? Jeez. The one thing, though, that the skill shot system does that I actually really like about it is that it sort of is this metagame or, like, leaderboard, but within the game itself. So you have this listing when you go into the menu, when you jack into the government pods, you get to see all the skill shots and it lists them and it tells you how to get them. Mm-hmm. So when you actually activate the first one, you get a huge bonus score. But as you start using it more and more and more, you get very little points for it. Hmm. So you need to sort of explore and try to figure out, okay, this is what I have to go and grab this guy and then kick him away and then try to get him with this. And, like, mm-hmm. you're trying to pull all of these different moves and use the environment to your benefit in order to get more and more points. So it's like building in an achievement system within a game that already has an mm-hmm. achievement system.
And the unlocks are it doesn't suddenly unlock the ability to do it. What it's doing is it's acknowledging that you became skillful enough to use the environment and the weapons, mm-hmm. and you unlock it by doing it. I mean, it sounds kind of weird, but, like, if you don't know what the thing is to do, how do you know to do it?
Right.
But there'll be times where you're in an environment and you can, like, pull someone off a bridge but keep them on the leash and kind of swing them into a cliff face. Or you can, like, there's some really brutal stuff that you can do.
Right.
And it's by noticing what the environment could afford you with these mechanics.
Right.
And more often than not, it's like, hey, what do you know? You just got a million points for skewering some guy on the stick.
Well, I'm assuming it sounds like the stuff you're talking about doing sounds pretty complicated. I'm assuming the controls must be pretty tight. Like, I mean,
there's a lot of it where it kind of just gets on with it, you know?
Yeah.
You hit the button and sort of yank the guy towards you, and then you're just in kind of like almost button mashing sometimes to get it. I mean, it's very simple, really.
The only part where it gets complicated is when you have sort of a setup and you realize you don't have the right weapon, and then you try to change weapons by selecting it on the D-pad, and then you're kind of juggling the menus that way. But for pulling people in and using the kicks and all that other stuff, it's pretty straightforward and pretty simplistic.
And then it calls you dick tits.
Yeah, constantly. Awesome. I don't. Tits. What did I say? I said in my review, I said there was more mentions of dick than a Nixon documentary. I think that was what I said. And it's like you hear that so many times.
You used the phrase bullet craving anuses.
Yes, I did use the phrase bullet craving anuses.
By the way, the most amazing thing I've ever read.
There's an achievement called fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Which is shooting somebody in the ass or something, right?
It's rear entry, actually.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And they all have names like that. Like, everything is named like gangbang and rear entry, and they have all these weird ass names, and it's
so we're back to the 12-year-old thing.
Yeah. It is.
There was definitely I was playing it and it was like shouting this stuff. And like every now and then my wife, she was like reading a magazine or something, and she was like,
she's reading the New Yorker and you're just listening.
What did it just call you? Yes, honey, it called me dick tits. Oh, charming.
At a certain point, though, it becomes self-aware.
It does.
I'm not supposed to talk. I love that, Jeff. I'm not supposed to talk Kanata.
Well, I wanted to. You mentioned 12 years, and it's a good thing that you pulled that, because what I mentioned in my review is, and I'm going to get your opinion on this, is for me, it seems like this is where Duke Nukem would have evolved to. It's like at a point where Duke Nukem is now in today's age is not, it's not harsh. It's not, you know, oh my God, he said the word shit, you know, like now they're creating words in order to shock. But like Duke Nukem to me is like, it is a game that I think is so out of its element when something like Bulletstorm exists, because Bulletstorm does something that I think that series, if it had, you know, continued and the games kept evolving, may have got to. Yeah. You know?
Are you saying playing off of early, late 80s, early 90s Schwarzenegger stereotype is no longer hilarious and relevant?
Unless the game starts off and you're leaving office, I don't think it's going to be relevant anymore.
Oh.
A little political.
I'm the Canadian politics.
But I do, I think, like we were talking about Dead Space earlier, I think there are mechanics in Bulletstorm that we're going to see liberally borrowed in lots of other games, because this nature of, I mean, people have riffed on it with, you know, the force type mechanics, but it's so brutal, this kind of push and pull and making use of the environment, and I think we're going to see it a lot, like the dismemberment in Dead Space.
I'll ask you the same question I ask everybody about this game, because I still haven't really played it. Did you get into a sort of rote pattern of using combo shots, or did you find that even near the end of the game you were still like experimenting and playing around with the combo system?
I'm playing around all the time. In fact, it dawned on me after a couple of hours in that I was no longer just shooting things ever. Like, I mean, you get some pretty good guns at where you could just mow everything down, and it just seems ridiculous to do that when the gameplay mechanics are clearly not designed for that.
Right.
Which Plus, is you got your leash on there, and it's telling you, man, you got to do more for the government.
Yeah, the government, right. You know, they want to tell you.
Which is really interesting for that game, because the weapons in that game and some of the secondary functions are really, really awesome. Like the sniper rifle secondary function, where you like fire it into a guy, and then you can use it like burnout and like steer his body, and then press a button and blow up his body, and you kill a bunch of people.
It
gets crazier and crazier and crazier.
And it gets so nuts that when they do try and pull it back into some kind of like real narrative, you're like, why are you even bothering? I mean, it's not too much of a spoiler, but a little bit of a spoiler here. There is a dramatic moment where it is revealed to you that you have become this sort of puppet instrument of the government, and the outrage from these four big guys that are just going around killing everything is like, suddenly there's this sort of indignant, like, oh my God, I can't believe it. And it's like, so what?
And here's where it breaks another level, which is it happens right in the beginning. It starts with you blowing up a giant carrier ship with a bunch of people on it. And the reason why you want to do it is because you want to kill one guy who made you kill all these innocent people. Yeah. Like, so you killed a ship full of innocent people because that one guy you want to kill made you kill innocent. Like, it breaks itself.
I was gonna say,
he starts joking about that later, and it's hilarious.
I know they bring it up, and that's what I think. It becomes more serious in the end. Crazy Kanata over here.
I can't stand by and let you disparage this game.
I like the game. I think that it did a lot of really cool game mechanics. I mean, I'm not gonna look into fanfic for it, especially for this game. But I think that, you know, the story to me is just ridiculous enough that it tells what it needs to tell in order to show you these mechanics.
Like,
in
for the
it.
First 20 minutes of the game, I was just like, oh God.
Well, the first about hour of the game is terrible. When you don't have the leash and you don't have all of that stuff, it's just like.
But then after about an hour, I'm like, you know, I really kind of like this.
So it's the guilty pleasure syndrome.
Oh, very much so. Yeah.
Right. You could pick up some new vocab if you went for the fanfic.
Am I allowed to say these words on shacknews.com when I write?
No.
Okay, I'm just gonna. We'll just start reviewing things and like, this is three dick tits or like. Does that
no? No,
I don't think it's gonna work.
No, we're not gonna do that.
Somebody brought up on Twitter, I think, to Cliffy retweeted or something, that isn't dick tits basically testicles? It's kind of what those,
he did tweet someone.
Blew my mind,
he
Mark
did
McDonald.
Tweet someone, which was a guy that like with a trench coat open with dicks for tits.
Well, that's going the other way, kind of with it. But that now my mind is blown.
And I also never want to see fan art for.
Oh my God, no! Please,
that's another
no.
thing I never want to see.
Please, no! This is not what I want to see.
If you want to send it, you can send it to Garnet Lee at Shack News.
No.
Photoshop's accepted. At Garnet's going to be posting on Twitter the best Photoshops sent to his Shack News email on the subject we've been talking about.
I'm going to. No.
Is there anything else you want to know about it? Because you were quite interested.
No, I was. I mean, it just bears out kind of what I've heard of it, which is kind of like some people aren't kind of into the outside trappings, but underneath that, yeah, there's like a really solid.
So with all that,
game.
Why did this game need multiplayer?
Well, the multiplayer aspect of it is essentially horde mode. It's essentially just a co-op horde mode where you are working together.
There's no yeah, co-op campaign. There's no real competitive multiplayer.
Can do like team skill shots where you work together in order to do something. Like you can grab a leash a guy and then like bounce him around with your friend. And the other thing is Echo, where it's basically time trial and you just try to get through.
The Echo possible. Thing made sense to me, but I didn't understand that it was only co-op multiplayer. I thought there was like a competitive multiplayer.
The demo did a really good job in kind of getting the message about this game across. Like, a lot of people ain't picked up on what's really cool about it from the demo.
I want to compare, if you guys, since we're like talking about shooters, I've seen two multiplayer shooters in the last couple of weeks that are both really team-based and very, very different approaches to how to make a team-based game work. So the first one is Brink, which I'm super excited about. And the second one...
That.
Oh my God, it's amazing. I'm so excited that I can finally talk about Brink because there's so many cool things that it does.
Yeah.
And the other one is SOCOM. And I feel like they're at different ends of the spectrum because Brink wants to be a really cool team-based shooter, but one that they can really build a real big audience around that anyone can hop in.
SOCOM's relevant anymore.
And play and have a good time. And then SOCOM's the other end. SOCOM is like completely, and there'll be people who love it, but it's completely soaking up the... We are a competitive, like, this is a hardcore game, and you need to learn how to play our fucking game.
Do you think people give a shit anymore, though?
Oh, I think so, yeah.
I mean, like, the super hardcore, been playing since the first one community, which is, like, dwindling
with
every subsequent release.
No, I don't. But I think what they're doing is very clearly going to that SOCOM player base.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a single player game. You know, I think there'll be people who are excited about that are interested in, I mean, if you're interested in
I loved it, and I wish they'd kind of handled the franchise better over the years. I think they kind of let it...
Well, they let other developers touch it, sort of lost pace, and they tried to do different things with it.
Well, even when they didn't let other developers touch it, I think it was such a big surprise hit from the first game that they started, and they had this great community, and they started getting feedback. It's kind of like... This happens to a lot of, I can't hang in Halo anymore, and I was a huge Halo guy. It happens in fighting games. It happens in a lot of stuff. I think it got kind of more specialized.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. I thought that the messaging and the thing of this was going to be pull it, like everything else, into more of a Call of Duty friendly direction.
See, I thought it was more action based because the last PSP game, because the PSP game used to be very strategic, and then the last PSP game went very action heavy. So I thought they were going to try to go in that direction as well.
Well, I mean, and look at, like, for instance, the last of the multiplayer modes was revealed here at GDC. We got to play it. It's called Bomb Squad, and it's basically it's a really cool game mode. It's basically Hurt Locker. One dude on one team is the Hurt Locker guy. And he's like in the big bomb defusal suit.
John PlayStation guy, you mean?
John Locker.
PlayStation Move. PlayStation Move support.
He's from Move support.
Cutting the wires.
So what I always liked about SOCOM was it had the same kind of spirit as the early Rainbow Six games. Like that kind of like really feeling like there was like a more methodical pace to it.
Definitely.
Like, remember the original Rainbow Six?
Where you had to manage the map,
you had to like manage waypoints. And
are you talking about single player or multiplayer now?
Well, either. Because I mean, like, one thing about SOCOM 1 and SOCOM 2 is that it was quite evocative of that kind of military shooter where it was like, it was almost, you had to hang together, you had to coordinate, and it was very. It was much slower than Call of Duty.
Exactly. You're not going to play SOCOM 4 multiplayer casually very long. Mm-hmm. You're either going to decide, I like this game and I want to go learn how to play it, or you're going to say, fuck this. Because, like, take this bomb squad. So there's three bombs placed on the map. And the one team has to protect the bomb squad guy, get him to each of the bomb places, and defuse them within a set time limit. The other team is obviously trying to stop you from defusing the bombs.
Sort of a capture the flag, but with a different mechanic.
Yes, and it's really challenging because it's also an escort mission. It's also like the old assassination thing because they're like really the other team doesn't really give a damn about killing anybody but the bomb disposal guy because every time they kill him, then he goes back on respawn countdown and goes all the way back to the respawn.
Right.
And if you're trying to get him there,
and it's a single job, single player, it doesn't hop from player to player.
It's
like
single
if you're
job,
the bomb
single
guy,
player.
You're
the bomb guy. Now the bomb guy is not screwed. He actually has two awesome weapons. He has a full auto shotgun. And he's the only character that has a grenade launcher like the old like the noob tube thing. So it's not like he's just sitting duck.
I'm just going to stand next to this very sensitive bomb with these incredibly volatile. Like, let me put my
grenade
weapon.
Launcher yeah. next to it.
Hey, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? So it requires a great degree of coordination on both sides because, you know, and look, like casual people hop in. If they're just running around and like playing, oh, I'm going to shoot you, it's like some kind of death match, right? Then obviously the game's going to completely fall apart and no one's going to win.
Right,
really
but
time.
Then at the same time, it's like they show that and they show it seems it's pretty hardcore and they're like, hey, by the way, buy PlayStation Move to play with this. I understand how that works in tandem with it being very strategic. And
dude, the sharpshooter attachment with the Move is a shockingly good way to play a shooter. Really? It's
I heard that actually. It's from a couple people.
Fucking great. I'm totally stunned. It's not the way I'm going to choose to play shooters because I'm still not like fatigue on top of everything else. I just wanted to stand there with a gun. I like playing
getting
with sticks.
Getting older. Shoulder joints. They start creaking and like...
So what else? What out of GDC? What about like a smaller stuff or anything? Because it really, like Jeff was saying earlier, like there's just a ton.
Don't worry. We'll come back to Brink sometime.
Get out of here.
I think Sorry. Gunnit wanted to talk
Yeah, you
about
wanted to
Brink.
Bring up Brink.
Oh.
But okay. It's okay. We can talk about the GD stuff.
No, no, no. That's fine. That's cool. I just thought, you know, it was... GDC, it'd be cool to
people listen to the show for games. These are all games we like been you know building up to talk about.
Well, let's talk about
Brink. I'm getting confused on this because all the shooters. Brink is the one with the billions of weapon combinations, right?
Yes, you can customize your weapons and you can unlock attachments by running challenges in the game. But I mean, that's not like a big
gearbox. No.
No, it's done by splash damage.
Splash damage.
Yeah,
that's
yeah it's
right.
done.
Okay.
It's done by the enemy territory guys, Wolfenstein, gotcha, and then yeah. Quake Wars. And
it has a very distinctive look, right?
Yeah, yeah, it has a very distinctive look in that sort of like near cartoon but not cartoon. Right. It's not going as far as Team Fortress 2, obviously. Mm-hmm.
But
it has
got
like
a bit of a sort of Borderlands-y kind of
vibe
to
it. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And that's like part of it because they're also into like customizing the characters and stuff. But I think that it really reflects a team that's like made, look, they're like, we made Wolfenstein, Enemy Territory, we made Quake Wars, and these games had great systems. But the reality is, like, the player base was only, like, the SOCOM games. It was only this tight-knit, small group, and we never were able to build outside of that. How can we make a game where people can jump in and enjoy it and play?
I remember this one. It's the one with the arcs, right?
Yeah. You're playing the arc, right? Yeah. There's like the police force, which I forget the name of right off the top of my head, and the resistance. And so the way they conquer it is by having so many systems that are running in the background to handle all of the stuff that you would do in team coordination for you so you can just play the game. So for instance, most team-based games, you would think, oh, I have to talk a lot, right? But the voice chat is by default set off in this because they have this AI routine that runs all the time and does all of the voice chat that you would do if you were playing on a well-coordinated team. So you go
Wait,
take...
it talks for me?
Yes. Exactly. It tells
it
the team
silly
what
voices?
To
I'm going to let you finish explaining this and hear it out because I hadn't heard this before I
Rail?
Shit on it. But go ahead because I want to be convinced. I want to be convinced.
Okay, so,
but my mind's already made up. You're talking bullshit.
Well, I'm skeptical. I'm skeptical. That's a funny way.
The best game I ever
that's a funny way of saying I'm skeptical, but I want to hear how this works.
Okay, so then let me give you the other parts of it. So tie this in with the assignment system where you know it's class-based shooter. So a lot of times you want to play a class and then you want to go do things that make sense. And the game is constantly looking at your team, what's coming
so
next.
So it
that
tells
you
what
do.
To do and then it speaks for you. Do you have to marry it first?
Give me an example. Give me an example, please, because I really want to hear this out.
Let's say that you want to play an engineer, okay?
Yes.
And in the mission you're on, so the second mission I played was the second mission was a honey, it's time to come to bed. The second mission was a jailbreak mission, okay? So we're playing on the team.
Oh, it is
go.
Like being married then. Sorry, go ahead.
The second mission, it was jailbreak. So we had to go and break into this jail. And so at a very early part in the time, we had to, one of the engineering jobs was you had to go, we needed someone to go blow the door to get into the jail facility, right? Mm-hmm. We had enough engineers working on that task that the game sits there and says, oh, well, you know, I've already got three engineers assigned to blowing the door. There's mm-hmm. two other things an engineer could be doing right now. One of them was building a supply or taking over a supply station.
Yeah.
And that would give us extra supply for our team. And so it assigned me to go take over that supply dump.
So you say it assigned you that.
Yeah.
Does it just say that? Hey, go pick up the supply
it
dump.
It doesn't even do that. It offers me the chance to like take, well, it offers me the chance to take that as my default. And then it says, and then into voice chat, it says, hey, I'm going to go capture the supply dump.
Oh, once you say, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
But how does that, okay.
And then it dumps that into my, now I can, if I want to, I can pull up a menu of an engineer goals that I could go do right now, and it shows me, oh, you know, three teammates are doing this, and no one's doing this, no one's doing that.
Then
I could go
if you mowed the lawn
else.
And took out the garbage.
I just like it sounds like a fine idea to me, but it sounds like an add on thing. It doesn't sound like a replacement for voice chat. It's like there's so much subtlety and strategy and like what you're doing and things changing and informing people. Having voice chat default off in any kind of cooperative competitive multiplayer thing just sounds, you know, like really, is this system really gonna replace
I hear you in lots of
voice
games.
Chat
I get it. I think that especially now, think about the rest of what I'm saying is like they're going for a larger audience. They
so
want to get out a
team
based game that doesn't have to be, you don't have to be in a clan, you can hop into games and
sure.
play them.
If you turn voice chat on, does it still do that, or are you on your own?
Is voice chat on
sort of opting out of the coordinated.
I would imagine there's probably a toggle for it one way or the other. I actually didn't ask. I didn't think about it because I was so blown over.
Guys, like, cover me when I do that. And he goes, no, you don't want to do that.
It's like you're schizo or something, or you're playing this fucking game. But I mean, do you think that, I don't know whether or not you interviewed anyone when you went to go see it, or do you think that it was a function of, do you think it's a function of, hey, we know people don't want to talk to each other because there are dicks on Xbox Live and PSN, or is it a function of, dick tits, or is it a function of the fact that they're like, this is what we think would be best for this particular game?
I think it's definitely the latter, and I think that the way they got there was looking at the way people talk on chat services when, like, look, the thing they said is, like, people don't talk a lot, or when they do talk, they don't, you know, if they're not playing in a clan, then they don't really well coordinate it. And then you've got all the asshats on top of that.
Yeah.
So the experience is never the way it should be if you were playing in a good coordinated team. But unless you're the hardcore guy who's going to go join clans and stuff, you never get that experience.
See, what I would want from it is the total opposite, which would be that I could set the other people I'm playing with, if they're being idiots, to turn them off and let the computer tell me what they're doing.
Yeah.
Like, that would be better for me.
Somebody write that down, because
that's kind of complex. Now you can all complicate. Okay, Mark, what do you think about this? You don't have, you know, typically in a multiplayer shooter, you've got like a lobby system. You go in and people like decide, oh, do we want to play this map, this game mode, all that kind of stuff. This game doesn't work like that. This game, you start it up and you decide what you want to play. Mm-hmm. And then it either finds a game already in progress that fits what you want to play.
Revolutionary concept. I can't even wrap my mind around that.
They should call it Optimatch or no.
Or it creates its own new game with everybody else that it needs to filled out with bots, because it has like a really sophisticated bot AI system.
So how do you even know? Is there like even an indication if there's no voice chat?
You don't.
Yeah,
you actually don't know.
So human involvement is irrelevant. It'll just get home and play itself.
So I want to
wait a minute. Is this game fucking self-aware? Like, this is like fucking Terminator shit you're telling me.
Fuck it. I want to play Capture the Flag. No one's here. I'm just gonna do it.
So your system turns on in the middle of the night, and then you're like, "How did this happen?"
If you want it, not if you don't want to play with bots, there's no way. There's a way to tell I'm playing with. There's like an indicator next to people's names.
Yeah, there's an indicator you can tell. And obviously, you'll be able to tell by the player names. Like,
so the whole thing is multiplayer only as well. I get
the whole thing is multiplayer. Yeah. The whole game is like there's single play. You can play it single player, but you're essentially playing the missions that you'll be playing in multiplayer, because that's what you do. You like choose. I'm going to choose chapter 2, mission 1, and then you can either
Quake Wars kind of did that, right? Wasn't that built that one of their previous games was built that way? Maybe it was
Quake Wars Enemy Territory.
Yeah.
I think that did something like that. I mean, this chat thing is brand new,
but the structure of it being of single and multi being sort of indistinguishable from
which is sort of what a Return of Castle Wolfenstein's Enemy Territory was. The online function of that was basically like, we have all of these assignments for specific classes. This seems to just go to a different direction.
They've definitely, like, and that's why I was saying is I think they picked up on all the reasons that those games didn't break out of their just core audience and tried to address them. And I tell you what, I had a fucking blast playing this game. I had so much fun because what wound up happening is I was always playing the shooter part. I wasn't worrying and thinking about all those other pieces. And I get that if you're into that hardcore, that you like thinking about those. But that's probably
no. So it works.
Plenty of other options.
It works great.
Go and try.
It works great. Like the whole time, I'm always doing something, and I'm always doing something that's contributing to the team, and I'm always like hitting the next thing that we did successfully because it's always pushing me to that.
But how much of it is like, oh, we know that, you know, a more casual shooter fan would need this help and wouldn't
It's sort of like
it's not aimed at casual because the shooting part is
it sounds
really
like it's already expecting people not to do something. You're playing this game like, we already expect our audience not to work together, so let's create a system in which they never have to.
It's looking at the way people play Call of Duty and the way they play like Medal of Honor and saying, you could have a little bit more structured experience and have some fun with it, and here's how to do it where we'll take care of all that part for you instead of counting on you to do it because we kind of know you're not going to do it.
Well, I feel like we've talked around the like the meat of the game a lot and these different things, which I think are interesting. But like, so what do you speak to like the core meat and potatoes of the game, like the core mechanics and stuff?
The core game is classic like UT assault mode. Each, you know, one team will be on some sort of offensive mission, whether it's like a search and destroy or a go and like retrieve the prisoner out of the jail thing, or like go retrieve some secret documents or download something out of a computer. The other team will be trying to defend, and it's a series of waypoints that you're getting through, and each one has like a time limit. So when the assaulting team hits that next one, then of course the clock advances and they get a little more time to get to the next one.
So how are the weapons?
The weapons are awesome. They have a ton, like John talked about, they like have a huge weapon customization system, and you earn them by doing special challenges. And so like that's the tutorial for the game. There's no tutorial. The tutorial is all of the stuff that will – all of the little mini missions that you use to unlock gun stuff is actually teaching you how to do what you do in the game. But they're using it at the same time as like the currency for you to buy the upgrades for your gun. So you like, you want the red dot scope, you go and see what it takes to get the red dot scope, and it's probably something that teaches you how to be an engineer and take over a supply dump.
Okay.
I really had a good time with it. And the shooting mechanic was great. We played it on PS3, which totally blew me away because it felt really good under the stick control, and the buttons felt really good under my fingers. I'm sure everyone who plays it on PC will probably have the best experience, but
yeah, they don't need
really
to worry
impressed.
About people talking on the PS3 anyway.
right? And you see, there you go. That's another thing. Like, here's a game for PS3. Like, you don't even have to have a Bluetooth headset, and it does all those things you would be doing.
Right.
I don't know. I had a blast with it. I really had a lot of fun with it. So
cool.
Mark, anything before we turn
you
loose?
Talk about smaller games now for a minute? Or a couple? Or one?
Yeah.
Okay, one.
No, however long you want. This is your last moment, I guess.
Well, the one game that I'm probably most excited about, just to it's an indie game. It's from Cappy Games. But do you guys know about this Sword and Sorcery EP game?
Oh, is that the one with the pixel?
Yes. Yeah. Really awesome. Yeah. Yeah.
Is it out anytime soon?
Super Brothers. Yes. So they released a trailer right before GDC.
Yeah.
And it said like the spring equinox, which is basically the way of saying like late March, I think, is when it's coming out. So it's leading on iPad, then it's coming out on iPhone. You guys haven't seen it. It's like an adventure game, kind of. I don't even know how they describe it. It's kind of weird, but at its heart, it is an adventure game. You're going around talking to people. It's very mysterious, though. It's not exactly any one thing. There is like a combat where you get into kind of a one-on-one combat, and I don't know. I've only seen the combat. I haven't actually done that part myself. But
is almost, I mean, sub 8-bit pixel. I mean, it's not detailed pixel art. It's almost like the kind of animated stick figures that were in like what was it called in the US? It was called the Philips G7000, the Magnavox type. You know, that era. Like animated stick, yeah, not Vectrex, but that kind of like
the Odyssey is over.
Yeah, Odyssey. That's Odyssey 2. Some of the graphics are like Odyssey 2 graphics.
It's very,
but very stylized.
Yeah, it's this guy Super Brothers, Craig. Adams, who did a bunch of like viral web videos, and he's done some other stuff. But the aesthetic I think is awesome. It's incredible. It's very moody. It's very like it's like a sense of feel, and it's not like a normal adventure game or any kind of normal game at all. It's got a lot of really creative weird ideas and stuff in it. It's like meant to evoke moods, and
it sounds like I really like it.
Yeah, I mean,
it sounds like I really like it.
It's an indie game, but there's been like buzz brewing on this for nearly a year now. I think he showed like a really early trailer of just the guy standing with his sword up.
Yes, so they
like
had
a
it
a year ago.
Yeah, they had it at last GDC actually, and they had it playable, and people got really excited. And then they're like, oh, okay, now we have to actually build it.
What was the name of it?
Sword and Sorcery, and Sorcery is spelled Sword. Cery, but the aesthetic of it, I think if you see, go and watch a video, and you maybe can see kind of how I'm excited, even though I haven't played it. I'm excited about it, and these guys, I saw a couple videos about this guy Craig talking about kind of his design philosophy And I've talked about it before, and I think it's really interesting. It's like you don't explain everything. Like games kind of maybe over-explain themselves these days, and instead of filling in the gaps with your imagination or just the kind of discovery of figuring stuff out, like you did if you got had an Apple II or a Commodore 64 back in the day and got a whole bunch of games without instruction manuals or whatever, like you did yourself sort of figure it out. That's kind of what it's about, and also like offering kind of new experiences and stuff. Robert Ashley is actually a voice.
Oh,
in,
no shit.
In the game. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, because awesome. How they got together in the publishing deal is a whole other story, but Robert Ashley had.
I love the also so. Like sort of homage to the Triforce there in the logo, too. Yeah. This looks really cool.
Looks really awesome.
We should have laptops excited. With us all the time so we could like look like we know what we're talking about.
Plus, I'm getting an iPad, too, so I'll finally have an iPad, so I'm excited to have a game that I actually really want to play on it.
Yeah.
Soon.
You have to come back to America soon. We need more Mark McDonald on the show.
I would love to be on the show.
Anytime you're in Los Angeles.
Why don't you come
Angeles?
To Tokyo more often? We can do it that way.
I'm
Jeff, bring everybody. Bring the whole gang.
Let's all go to Tokyo.
Yeah. Everybody.
Yeah. Brooklyn's in. She's already like, hell yeah.
Me too.
Get in the car, everybody. We're going to Tokyo.
Let's just like, go grab the Gamefly jet. Let's
you can go over segment length all you want if we go to Tokyo.
Everybody, yes. Please do.
Dude, really,
you can be
really
on the 8-4 Play podcast, 8-4.jp. Oh, how I subtly snuck that in there.
Remember when we helped, like, we did the two-parter at TGS? That was awesome.
All honor to you, and you guys here on We Can Confirm. That was huge for us. We really appreciate that.
We love you guys.
Yeah.
Miss having you here, and really, really appreciate you coming on to the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we're going to do one more segment here from GDC 2011. I have no idea what we'll talk about. We'll figure it out. And Jeff Cannata will come back, and we will wish Mark a fond farewell and safe travels and talk to you soon, and we will be back in just a moment.
It's been 107 days, 4 hours, 15 minutes, and 4 junk phone calls since we've been done. Party scene is new to me. I've been with you and out of the loop for oh so long. And I've been asking him while singing solemn church hymns if I was wrong. There's more to say to you. Wish I could like I used to, but a line's been drawn, and I will not be a creeper. No! Sounds like it could be pretty cool. I'm just a suit. I saw you at the store Sunday. I panicked, terrified. I died behind the nearby diaper display. And I've been asking him, crouching amidst deodorant, if I was wrong. Evaluating my response while sprinting through the parking lot. Could this go on? Should I grow a pair and just say hi? That you're moving to Alaska. Thought it was cold enough here. Panic attack, think that I should spill the beans and tell you everything. But that'd be weird. But if I don't go now, how will we have that happy ending?
that the cinema promises us. It's time to stick it out, give us a chance to work it out. It's been too long, gonna suck it up and just say hi.
Knights Errant bringing it strong with Hiya in the featured music segment today. And they are rocking it on the 50th edition of Weekend Confirmed. Also GDC 2011. And now Mr. Jeff Cannata is back with us.
Yeah, it turns out it's very difficult for me to sit on the sidelines and not say stuff.
Imagine.
Apparently.
Yeah, my left ear knows all too well.
Apparently.
But I'm sitting there and it's the big GDC show. Everybody
the big
tunes
GDC
in.
Show.
It's GDC. And you guys... There's like 1,000 games that I saw, and you guys are talking about Dead Space, I hear, and Bulletstorm.
Okay. Don't hate. I don't get to talk to Mark McDonald about games nearly often enough, and...
Yeah, I know. It was good.
We talked about Brink and Sword and Sorcery.
This is true.
And,
Man, you guys were really anti-Brink. I was surprised. I was so excited
about
it.
No, we weren't anti-Brink. We were just finding it amusing that it sort of, you know...
Took over.
Bosses you around.
There's some guys who like that.
So there's like 50 million appointments that we've all had. So
all right.
There's like, you know. Yeah.
Bring it. What do you said you want to talk about 1,000 games. Go for it. What do you want to talk about?
1,000 games. Well, I just, the last thing I saw before I came over here was, well, that's not true. I saw something else. But a big thing that I saw was Darkness 2, which had its coming out party. Yeah, at GDC.
And? Not Starbreeze now. I'm worried.
If you like GDC, if you like The Darkness, I think you'll probably like Darkness 2. Mm-hmm. It looks pretty. They have this interesting sort of comic book look to it. It's less realistic looking.
It's very angular, everything, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's ramped up gore, a lot of gore. Yeah. And the first game was kind of gory, but not like
this.
And you
quad-wheeled.
But I was thinking about it when listening to you talk about Bulletstorm, because it's exactly what you said, where... It feels like, oh, this is now Bulletstorm is obviously just came out, can't be influencing this game, but it feels similar in that these tentacles now, it's almost like the playground, grabbing guys, flinging them around. One tentacle is just for grabbing stuff, and the other is for severing things.
Yeah.
So,
well, to be fair, wasn't the first game a lot like that too? You were able to do those things.
But you
with...
couldn't. I don't think you could shoot. You were either in tentacle mode or you were in killing things
was
with guns.
Was there no quad
mode.
Technology back then?
There was
then?
No quad wielding technology. That is the big advancement in the Darkness 2.
So now you can
dangle, cut, and shoot at the same time.
Man, the back of the box has so many check marks on it.
I played all the way through Darkness, and I remember really liking it. And I'm trying to like search through my admittedly GDC alcohol wrecked brain of memories. I don't think you could shoot when you were in
It was either or.
But that was really cool because the way they did that was then you had like all the things that it was always a trade off, right? You were always like it was always a balance back and forth. Like why make me able to shoot then? I don't
because now you've had more practice and
I think it just sort of to me on the face of it sounds like it dilutes. Something that made it unique and different and had a balance to it.
But it's more, Garnet. It's, in fact, two more.
Garnet wants the computer. The Garnet wants the computer to control the arms for him or tell him
where to go.
Yes.
I like how the game is this mashup between a real mobster movie and a horror movie.
Right.
That was cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't know that it was like a horror movie. It was just sort of like a weird sci fi, like Outer Limits sort of
gory.
Thing.
Gory. Remember, like, taking his hearts out and eating them?
All right.
That's
it was
pretty
sort
gory,
of...
right?
Yeah.
I've not been desensitized that much, have I?
Maybe.
This trailer started with an Igor-looking dude determined to get the darkness out of you. He's torturing you in his secret underground lair. And then cuts to like a flashback of this mobster scene straight out of Goodfellas where you're walking into a restaurant and you're walking by all these tables. Mm-hmm. And then bad shit happens at the restaurant.
Bad shit.
The stuff in really the first bad. One that kind of lost me was some of the later World War
Where you have to
one,
travel.
Two? There was stuff with the train.
I think
and
it was
like
World War
the,
One.
Yeah,
it was World War
One. Zombie soldiers and
It was like the discovery of the darkness, though. Like, yeah. It was like, give me some backstory. Like, right. You know, a little
more?
They
just overdid it a bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think I stopped playing it at a certain point where there was a giant train that you had to move or something. Yeah. And I was just like, yeah, I think I'm done. I don't really want to deal with this anymore.
Fair enough.
And I do remember sitting on the couch next to your girlfriend and it kind of implying that you could just sort of sit there and watch TV with her or whatever. And it's like, you knew something bad had to happen. You could just sort of delay the inevitable and...
I thought that was kind of cool that you could sit there and delay the inevitable and just sit there and like watch. As soon as I get up, it's like the shit's going to hit the fan. But I can just sit here and watch television.
You shouldn't have installed the fan.
That's hilarious. All right. So you saw Darkness 2. And I'm sure it'll have a great multiplayer mode with quad wielding dudes.
Well, the first one didn't have any multiplayer at all.
Oh, but it'll have multiplayer now. It'll have to have multiplayer.
I thought quad wielding was cool. I thought it looked cool.
That's what you do if you have four hands.
What's his face from Faith No More doing the voice again, right? Mike.
Oh, is it?
I
don't know.
The guy who was the singer. Patton. Yeah. Mike Patton.
What is it?
Yeah. And that's how he talks all the way through. Isn't it?
Awesome. And then I saw Dead Island.
Oh, you did. Awesome.
Yeah. As did I.
And?
Zav, you can start.
So me and Jeff were talking about this earlier, and I think that trailer really hurt them.
Well, I guarantee you the trail really helped them, but how much it helped them or what position it put them in is a whole other question.
It's like wrapped around
hurt them.
No, I know. I'm saying that I think there's no denying it helped them. They were not going to be on it. Like,
oh,
they,
yeah, we're all talking about Dead Island and asking about Dead Island coverage, but it's mostly now.
The
so
fact
we can
now
say,
that, okay, so, you know, fast forwarding it to the very end of my demo, they said, oh, here's the new trailer for the game, and it's actually the game. And it's no emotionality. There's no emotion at all. There's nothing. It's you're playing as one of four character classes, and one of them. I mean, so the trailer that we saw was this family, and it's this struggle to survive, and this innocence lost, and you see this family just get massacred, and then they start the demo. And it's like, so in this demo, you're playing as a rap star. His name is Ben G or something,
and he says things like, damn, now that bitch is really dead.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Constantly.
Oh, my God.
Constantly.
So it's a little bit of a contrast to the exquisite, artful trailer that was
released. Right. Which, I mean, I didn't see the extended cut of that trailer. Maybe he was in there somewhere screaming in the background constantly.
So it basically doesn't aspire to any of the projections that it put out there.
No. See, no, I don't, you know, I don't know. It's difficult to say where the game is going to go from here because it's still pretty early from what we saw. I mean,
No, it's not.
Engine,
they've been working on it for 4 years.
Well, they announced the game so, long ago. They announced the game so fucking long ago, but the game itself is not going to be ready. I mean, they say it's going to come out at the end of this year.
Right.
I don't know because right now it's just, there's the island itself looks good, but there's just no emotion to anything. It seems like a class based zombie killer.
Yeah,
and with
a bit of Borderlands sort of.
It looked a lot like Far Cry meets Dead Rising. Yeah, especially the what was the Africa based Far Cry that was really more
Far Cry 2.
Was it Far Cry 2? Yeah. I thought it had a weird subtitle, but Instincts is a different thing. Yeah. But that game had a lot of open world, get mission, role playing stuff, and this looks like it's going to have a lot of. It does have some Borderlands-y stuff with like tech skill trees. All right,
so that could be cool because it would have a little bit more.
But it brings up there have been very few great video game trailers. I mean, there's been some very memorable ones, like the Metal Gear Solid 2 trailer. I think everyone remembers
Gears of War
with Mad World trailer, which was also very evocative of the game. Yeah. That was pretty moving. And some of the Halo trailers that really used the music well were quite moving. But apart from that, games that have had great trailers that also evoke the game very well are rare. I mean, it's usually just, you know, fast cut to...
But what you'll notice with all those examples is you've already seen what the game is at that point, so it's kind of giving you an insight as to what the story of that game is, whereas this is something they announced ages ago, we have not seen, and they show
and
you this
implied
trailer.
And emotion and emotion. Artistry that is just not present
it's
in the
not.
Product.
It's not. And one of the questions I even asked them was, are there even families on this island? Are there even children on this island? They said there are no children in this game. So even the
fuck? Are you kidding me?
Well, it's not that I want to murder children, Garnet. It's just that the concept of this family unit.
That's the point I'm saying is that not having...
So the trailer, if you know nothing about the game, the trailer says, hey, there's a bunch of people going on to this like beautiful like beach location, which, you know, Dead Island, which should have given it away. But apart from that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't really want to beat the game completely down before, you know, I see everything about it. But it's just that trailer really hurt them in the sense that there is an expectation of what this game is going to be in terms of its story. Mm-hmm. Because that trailer told more story from that trailer than I did from actually seeing the game live. I mean, there's no real story. You meet people and they give you missions and you go to workbenches and create weapons. It's like I'm playing Dead Rising 2, essentially, on an island in first person. And, you know, the game still has some potential because there's some cool ideas there, but it's not going to hit that mark of that trailer. And
I completely agree. And I think if you go in divorcing yourself from any expectations based on how really evocative that trailer was, it could be a really good game in the sense that Far Cry 2, and Far Cry 2, but on a zombie island is kind of awesome.
Right. And that Techland Chrome engine that they're using, I think this is like the fourth iteration of that engine. It looks really good. It's still pre-alpha and it looked really nice. I mean, the game looks nice. I just think that they need to divorce themselves of that image that they created with that trailer. I think that trailer was created to be like, you know, I have a really cool idea. This is what we can do. It's sort of
a different company made that trailer,
right? But also, what I think they're trying to do is sort of hitch their wagon on this Walking Dead thing, where it's not really about the zombie outbreak; it's about the people who survive it. And I think that a lot of games don't really do that. Yeah. I mean, zombie games don't do that. It's about killing as many zombies as you can, either comically or trying to survive to the end. It's doesn't tell the story of the people. But I mean, the only one person that I know that he screams the word bitch a lot, and I don't want him to survive. I would rather he die than actually, you know what I mean? It's just, I think that it would be a lot more interesting than if it was a more family unit oriented thing where you had to want the other people on the island to survive with you and not be this isolated character that has no connection to anyone else.
I agree with you. I look at that trailer and I go, I wish video games made me feel like this trailer makes
right.
me feel.
I mean, the character that they show in the demo is a guy who was hired, who's a guy who can't sell records anymore and was hired to go to that island just to play a show. So he knows no one on the island. There's no emotion for him there anyway. It's him trying to survive for himself. So how is that any different from me playing Left 4 Dead?
Right. I think it's interesting, though, to note that it's not a shooter, really. It's more of a melee combat, up close, hacking. I mean,
that actually goes back
nothing
to
was shot
design pitch.
In the entire demo. You can throw knives, but there were no guns at all in the
right. And you
there
can
was
also
an electric
build,
machete, though.
Yeah, you can build items by you find blueprints and you go to a workbench and you build items.
Wait,
and,
I played that game. That's a Capcom game.
So I mean, there's that, but there's certain things where it sort of goes back to the survival horror thing. And they first of all, they call this a zombie slasher action RPG. Was the genre they've created for it. Yeah. But there's no like
I'm impressed
survival
you remembered that.
Mode. Yeah, well, I
there
I
was a
notes.
PowerPoint presentation.
Right, yeah. There was a PowerPoint presentation. So I think that there's just elements of it that sound really, really interesting, but you keep going back to that trailer and it's just they're not going to hit that mark. So it's at the end of the day, you're I don't know what exactly that story is going to be.
That's a bummer.
Batman. Talk about it. Hit it. Batman. We both saw Batman. Did you see Batman, Garnet?
I did not see Batman.
No,
Batman.
What are you doing? Batman for me. That's what happens when I schedule GDC.
Yeah, you gave me some shitty choices there. What's up with that?
My take on Batman is, you know, I've been playing Assassin's Creed for years now, and basically Assassin's Creed is Batman in the 1400s or whatever time period it happens to be.
So Arkham City is...
Finally, Batman gets to be in an Assassin's Creed game.
Right.
Which is great. I'm excited for this.
I think the whole thing with that game, and I'm remembering back to the comments that we had on Shaq, was a lot of people were saying, well, you know, open world games, I don't know whether or not it's going to really work. And the thing with this game is they're not trying anything vastly different. It's enhanced. Like they were like, let's just keep pushing the walls out, literally, I guess, in terms of the Arkham Asylum is now this island. But, you know, the gadgetry has been upgraded to compensate for that. You know, you can do really cool moves like diving off of buildings and then swoop your cape up,
right.
Sort of like Mario with his power. So You could do that and then connect to anything with your grappling hook. And the world is just really large, and there's a lot of action going on, and everything is very iconic. I mean, the court, there's a courthouse where Two-Face is Catwoman captured, and the courthouse has been burned on one side. So it's pristine on one side and burn on the other. So they, and you know, like you bump into Jack Ryder, and like they're going, and so instead of just finding these little index cards of like, hey, these are characters in these in the Batman universe, it seems like you're going to be bumping into a lot more people.
Right.
Which I think is really cool, which is something that people would really like to see.
Mm-hmm. That's way more meaningful than like the whole, here's a card about history on this character that you met. Like, absolutely. Meet them in context and have that context with them.
And I don't know why no one has ripped off that fighting system yet. Because it's awesome. It's very satisfying. It feels like you can take on hordes of enemies. And one of the big things that they talked about is upping the number of people you'll be fighting at once or you'll be encountering at once.
You see, they say that.
But then they all ran away.
Yeah, so there's this moment where you go into the courthouse with, like, you know, before you could only could fight five people at once. Yeah. And then they're like, look in the window and you see 30 guys in there. And you're like, holy shit, Batman's going to tear some ass up, right? And then as soon as you break through the window, like 20 of the guys run away, and then you're just fighting five guys. I don't know why you
was
really
there a lot when the thing when you out. Saw it, was there a lot of using the environment like there were in the to take out guys stealthily, or is it more going in head on?
There's a suspicious amount of gargoyles even in Arkham City.
Oh, okay,
you know what I mean? Like,
and there's breakable walls where you can smash through.
So that's one thing that's cool. Instead of using like exploding gel, they were like, you know what? He's Batman. Fuck it. So he just breaks through the walls now, and you can just like grab guys. So it's more brute force. You could still do the Predator stealth stuff. That's still in the game, and it is basically the way that it worked before, where you need to go behind people and use, you know, the environment, and it's a lot of gargoyles, and I think
does it still have Batman vision?
Yes.
Detective vision.
Much more of that.
Much more of that.
But you're listening to radio signals from around the thing.
Yeah, it's sort of they pull the Dark Knight idea, where he like sort of taps into cell phone frequencies, and you can like listen in and get missions that way, because it's an open world game.
Okay. The one thing that really bugged me though is they did such a good job in the first game of keeping that in that UI really clean, and now there's this giant compass on the top of the screen whenever you're flying around Arkham City, and it's so ugly and plain.
You mean like the white, there's like a white line?
It's a white line with north, south. It's just a boring.
Well, maybe they'll dress it up some.
Maybe, but I feel like there's a better way to do that. If you need, clearly you need that in order to get around the city and or figure out where you're going, but it just felt so clunky and not Batman-like, and hopefully it changes. But
all right. What else? Oh, you know what? As long as you're talking about open world games, did you see the thing about Infamous 2 announcing user-made missions?
I was sitting right next to you.
Oh, that's right. You were there.
So what I thought was interesting about this is that we're all probably in agreement that that's kind of cool, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Little Infamous Planet.
So
I'm ready.
We threw it out to two different communities, on-site community and Facebook, and we're like, okay, what do you think? And the apathy toward this in Infamous...
Really?
A lot of gamers was really tangible. It was sort of like, yeah, so what? You know, doesn't make me any more interested in Infamous.
Was it Infamous driven, or was it creating my own missions doesn't matter?
I just think it's like, there was a lot of, I wasn't that interested in Infamous anyway.
Wow, really? Because I'm really excited for this game.
I don't know. I mean, there are definitely, but there seems to be a large element of people that are just like,
interesting. Too bad.
Yeah, the tool is quite detailed. Yeah.
It's incredible, actually. The event was odd because they were showing all these what they were calling like 1 minute levels or something.
Yeah.
Where it's showing the vast amount of things you can do with the tools to create really quick, kind of almost puzzly levels or whatever.
It's like make your own minigame.
But then there was they had two people who were on staff who just their job is to crank out user generated levels all day long, and I sat down and watched one of the guys working, and they were doing stuff on a level of complexity that dwarfed what they were actually showing. So you can actually map out really complicated AI routines for any of the NPCs. And so you can create basically campaigns. And I asked the guy, you know, I said, are you able to create missions that are prerequisites for other missions you create? Can you create a story? And he's like, I can't talk about it. I can't talk about it. So I don't know if that's going to be part of the game, but.
Wow.
He said you can basically create you lay down these nodes that are – it's all visually represented in the interface.
It looks like a bunch of landmines on the ground with cabling running between them.
Yeah,
and the cabling is like the logic wiring.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And you put splitters down to split the cable, so you create decision paths. And none of that actually stays in the world. It's just a visual representation that goes away when the level starts. And it doesn't matter where you put it. You just lay it, sprawl it all out to create basically a giant flow chart of behavior for the AI. And you can create a dialogue system, you can create sound effect, you can create all kinds of, if you choose this thing, then they'd go and do this. It's really complicated.
Wow.
So it seems like you could create entire story-based campaigns.
I think the saving grace for this thing is going to be that it's very visual driven. I mean, they talk about it being a visual editor. You're doing the entire thing in the game engine. There's no like console on the side.
You're not going into create.
You're not going
into a different create environment.
Right. You're just like you drop into the game engine and then you pull up. It's almost sort of LBP like in that you pull up icons and use the stick to like drop them into the space. And then,
but even more than LBP, you can hop in and out of the editor at any time
to test out. Yeah,
to test really cool. And you can halfway through a mission that you're playing, you're like, you know what, I'm gonna yank that guy out of this. Or you can be an editor and you can start the mission from halfway through to see how it goes. It's really robust. I was very
my
impressed.
Thought about wow. The apathy question was, I wonder how much of it might be driven from the fact that, you know, like I personally really love LBP and LBP2, but as much as I thought I would be inspired to go do stuff in the game, it's too much
work.
It's too much work. Mm-hmm. And too much there's just too much raw, like you have to do everything in that game. You're laying down everything. You're laying out the entire lay of the land, the environment, and then adding in all the game mechanic things. Here they're giving you like, look, we have this city. Here's the city. Now just create a mission in it.
Right.
Make scripts. Do something interesting. Make your own minigame if you want to, or do something else. But you know, like, it's like you already have that framework. So I see where it'd be very easy to start slow and then additively create a bigger and bigger mission. And I think the idea of having all those missions in the game every time, like you, like if your PS3 is connected to the internet, when you fire it up right away, you're going to see the Sucker Punch Select missions sitting in your game right next to the campaign missions.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that's going to be based off of the game, the ones that are played the most and rated the highest. And you can go and filter them or whatever, but they're always going to be there because you're just in this big open world and here are more missions. I think that's really smart. I think that's a really smart way to handle it. I don't know if they could ever translate that to LBP because like that's the other thing. Like LBP, remember, you're always like going around, oh, do I look at this planet? And then you're like trying to figure out how to filter content and all kinds of stuff.
The reason why LBP 1 and 2 is so successful in the way that it does that is because people, the only thing that limits you is your creativity. I mean, you could do whatever you want and create anything you want. This just sounds like we have a universe and here are some things that you can add to it, like create a mission within this Infamous. It doesn't seem like it offers you the same possibilities as LBP does, for
maybe
example.
Not exactly, but you'd be surprised at some of the stuff. Like there were platformer levels, there were shooting gallery levels,
there's really abstract stuff you can do.
Really bizarre.
It doesn't have to stay in the confines of a third person action game.
Is the editor, does it use move or anything? Is there any like different?
They weren't showing any move, anything. No,
it would be conducive to move.
Yeah, I could imagine kind of like be great playing through a level and going, yeah, I want to change this and sort of just. Yeah. Pointing at stuff.
Isn't this game just a couple months away?
Yeah. Yes, they're gonna. Yeah, as a matter of fact, they're doing a beta of this as well. So like, you go to the game's official site and sign up for that.
It's almost like they're crowdsourcing content. Yeah. Whereas Little Big Planet,
oh, they're totally crowdsourcing. That's exactly what they're doing.
But I think it's a distinct from Little Big Planet, which is sort of like, you know, the creation stuff is a whole different side. This feels like we're populating our game with levels that we want other people to make for us.
No, I agree.
Well, I mean, I remember interviewing some of the guys for LBP2, and their whole thing was that when they create missions and for the single player, they use the internal tools. So I wonder whether or not that would be something also the infamous, like DLC down the line, these are the Sucker Punch levels that we've created. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if that's something they're going to go. Because that also promotes the fact that, you know, we use it. It is as complex as we use, because people like the fact that they'll be able to do something as complex that's already available to them in the game.
Absolutely.
So I don't know. It'll be
they don't want to feel like they're fooling around with something that's not going to be as cool as what the big toys are.
Yeah.
No one wants to be in that second place.
So I want to talk about one of the biggest surprises of the show for me.
Sure.
Which was Darkspore, which I hadn't really.
Like it?
I really like it.
Are you liking it because of its Diablo-iness?
Yes. I mean, honestly, yes. It's sci-fi Diablo, and instead of getting sweet loots that, you know, shoulder pads only work on my shoulders and a hat only works on my head, I get sweet loots that I can put on my monster in any place I want, color it how I want,
yeah.
make it large or small, and it's that awesome Spore character creature yeah. creator that I had so much fun with, but the game was kind of boring. Yeah. And here the game is actually pretty fun.
Yeah.
And it's really, they do a really smart thing. It's, you don't just have one character like you would in Diablo. You have a team. You have these three characters that you can swap in and out at any time, almost like Marvel versus Capcom.
Yeah.
And so you'll create combinations of these teams, and there's like a rock, paper, scissors thing of like certain character classes work better against other monsters. And so you get a preview of the level you're about to play, and you can choose your class or your team accordingly. And then based on what team you have, certain spells, I guess, or skills that they have bleed over into your other guys. So if I have a guy that can do a teleportation thing, for example, one of my characters that doesn't have that ability, because he's teamed with that guy, gets that ability in combat, even when he's selected. So your team has certain properties based on its constitution that are sort of greater than the sum of its parts. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? And then you can swap in and out at any time, and you can create, like, there's a healer character that drops a tree of life that heals everybody. Mm-hmm. So you can drop that, swap into another character, heal him up, and, you know, be fighting with his abilities while the tree of life that you created with the other dude on your team
but
is still
isn't
active.
It fundamentally just an arena combat game?
No, there's a that's a PvP side, but there's a whole Diablo like campaign.
Oh, I didn't know that part. Yeah, the only part I've seen demoed is like the whole arena
sci-fi campaign thing.
Mm-hmm. Oh, now I'm more interested in the game.
Very cool.
Oh yeah, the PvP stuff is not really my speed. I got my ass handed to me when we were playing it, but the go through the thing co-op, which
that
is
would be fun.
Awesome. And yeah. Tons of content, tons of unlockables, tons of loot, and the loot is all really fun because you get to place it on your guy and make him change.
How far away is that game?
End of March.
End of
really
March.
Soon.
Yeah, oh. It's really soon. There's a beta going on right now with it. So,
aren't you supposed to say beta?
I've been around actually, long enough.
Before we, I just wanted to quickly say that I also saw Guild Wars 2 today.
Ooh. Oh my god, I'm so crazy
and,
hard on for that game.
It is. Yeah? The thing that it does that I really found interesting is, and I haven't really covered it before, so I'm not sure whether or not this has been talked about, but when you create your character and you go through the customization, you go through like a biography, sort of like Fallout 3. I think you also mentioned Ultima. Where you answer a bunch of questions to sort of decide the lineage of your character. And then it sort of gives you the story and it isolates you as a person within this story because you are the person who is going to make, you know, a difference in this world. So when you go through and you make all these selections, it sort of changes the story to base around the character that you've created in terms of not only your race and the class that you've selected, but these decisions that you've made.
I remember it was Ultima 8 did that, I think.
Yeah, I think
earlier.
You used to go to the fortune teller and she would ask you questions. And
wow. It's going back a long way.
So it's doing that. I think it might be the first time for an MMO in this, like that I've seen in the last couple of years, do anything that's this intricate about the game before you even start playing it. You know what I mean? They actually try to give you as much control over your destiny, essentially, mm-hmm. in the very beginning. And the only other thing that they were showing off is, and also it looks absolutely gorgeous. Like, I think the game looks fantastic. But the other thing they showed off is the Thief class that they just announced today,
mm-hmm.
Which is very cool. Because the game, it doesn't seem like the action runs on numbers. Like, we know when you're running away in an MMO, everyone's like going after you, and it's like, they're hitting you in the back as you're running. Now this game has like you could dodge and roll out of the way of attacks, and then the thief has this this move called the shadow something. I can't remember what it is. The shadow step that you can actually teleport to a range attack, and then attack from range, and then teleport into close and do close combat.
Wow!
And the action is, you know, when you're playing Arkham Asylum and you press jump and you're an enemy, and Batman like does a backflip over them and like kicks them in the back. The actual thief can do that in the combat, and the combat looks fantastic. Like, it doesn't look like MMO combat, and I'm not big on MMOs. But I think that for me, it looks like an action-heavy game, and it looks.
I think
really
they're going that way. I mean, DCUO kind of started moving in that direction. Yeah. Where it's not just, you know, hit the button and wait for them to finish.
Did
fighting.
You get to check out a? Did they were they showing like one of the dynamic world events?
Yeah,
because so, that's the part that I think is just crazy.
Yeah, so it's. I mean, the way that it works, it sort of it reminds me of the Warhammer MMO kind of did mm-hmm. this. You know, it's there. Are
is these... this the stuff that they promised in Star Wars Galaxies back in the day that they never actually delivered on, where everyone was going to experience a sort of world and environment changing event at the exact same time?
Not at the exact same time. Well, because because keep in mind the way the Guild Wars works is it's all built off instances.
Yeah.
But what will happen is that your world will change based off of what happens in these instances when the game is being played.
Oh, okay. Right.
And then that changes, you know, that alters the course of the world until, and last time I saw it, I don't think they'd figured out, like, exactly how the reset system worked. Because at some point in time, obviously,
there has to be some reset. They were talking about that. But what they are doing is they said that they looked at, you know, the history of MMOs and what they wanted to do next. And the next evolution to it is just make it more social. And the whole idea is creating these dynamic events that even if someone you don't know jumps into your dynamic event, it's not something that you're like, hey, you know, get out of here because you're going to steal my XP. It's sort of a social event where you start to work together because no one is left out. I mean, you all gain the same amount, and then it sort of it promotes the fact that you are working together as a group. I mean, one of the classes, the Guardian class, is especially built around being social. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can use your abilities to you can like trade in your abilities to give it to your entire team to give them buffs and stuff. So. Yeah. It just, to me, I'm really excited for it, but, you know, the game is still, I don't even know. I think it's coming out.
I don't think they've announced the release date still. Like, they've been cagey about it.
But I'm really looking forward to playing it, but we didn't actually get to play it.
Yeah, me too. Dude, time flies.
Yeah.
What do you know? Over 2 hours, and it feels like we've been here like 5 minutes. I'm like, wait, did we talk about, oh, crap.
Yeah, there's so many things.
It's,
so many
things.
And I feel so bad that we gave short shrift to the IGF stuff. Like, all the student competition and all that stuff is so interesting, and so this is really the only convention that highlights that, and these guys are thinking so far outside the box. It's so exciting to see these young kids come and showing games. I got to play that Hazard game that you it's so mind-bending. Yeah. Crazy.
Love that game.
Yeah,
well, J-Matt's going to be here soon and you can talk all about it. Jeff Mattis.
Yes. Yeah. So look, we're back next week. We're still here today at GDC as you're listening to this on Friday, so we'll check out some more IGF stuff. We'll just do more of it next week.
Yeah, right on.
That's easy, right? We got one more show to kill before the big 52.
Woo!
I know. It's scary how the time goes by. John, I missed you. Aw.
I'll come do it again.
All right. Come to L.A. You're welcome anytime. Yeah. We bring Zav down from Toronto so rarely also, so it's nice to have you here as well, man.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, guys.
Enjoyed it very much. Hope you guys enjoyed the show a lot. That's it from San Francisco and GDC. Once again, thanks very much to our hosts, CBS Interactive and the home of GameSpot. And anything else you want to plug? Plug away, dude. It's your studio.
That's fine. Yeah, GameSpot. Yeah.
Man,
we do that here.
Much appreciate.
That's a thing that exists.
It's a thing that exists. We have it.
Much appreciate the hospitality. So there you go. That is your weekend confirmed. And until next week, we are Ghost. The new me can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. These haters try to stop me, can't stop my shine. Can't stop my shine. Try to stop me, but they don't get close, so they do it from a distance. Week in Confirmed is brought to you by Game Center, the must-have app for gamers. Game Center is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 7,000 games. Game Center is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.